Yeah, I was thinking about what you said, you know, about Jay.
What about him?
I wasn't entirely honest with you. I guess I do kind of have feelings for him.
Tell me something I don't know.
But I just wanted to say that, you know, despite what you think about me and despite what you did, Ebony, are you listening to me at all?
What? What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say that you've got nothing to fear from me. I haven't given up on Bray, and I don't think I ever will. Look, I just want you guys to be happy. Okay?
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 52 of Conversational Negro Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
Tamsin.
Hi.
Maggie.
Hi.
And Matt.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 52... The screenplay was done by David Fox. It was directed by Peter Nathan. And the episode synopsis were read up by Matt.
The trap is set as the mall rats risk everything to bring the fight to the technos. But who will come out on top? Meanwhile, Ebony is disturbed by whispers from the past.
Okay, before we get started, I want to say, I don't think this is overall a terrible episode. There's a lot of good stuff in here. There's good acting. There's good cinematography. Direction is all very good. It doesn't save anything, and none of it makes sense when you take the season into a whole as the conclusion we've come to. But I just want to say, this isn't a terrible episode. I want to get that out there. It's bonkers. It's off the wall, but there's some good stuff in here.
I do agree that it's not awful, but I will say there was a point where I fell asleep.
I tried, Matt. That's it. I'm sorry. I'm done. That's the extent of my effort.
I'm sorry. I don't know if it was me or if it was the show, but I definitely conked out. I'm just glad it's over and we can move forward now, right?
I did feel that too. Like, it's done.
I loved it.
I don't know. I think this season gave me, especially towards this episode, it gave me a lot of false hope for what we would get in season 5.
They set up a lot in this that they're not going to fulfill.
Yeah.
And that's like, this season finale makes so much promises.
It also makes the same promises that season 3 did when the Guardian was talking to Lex.
I know, but at least with this... they showed us that people like Tyson could still be alive.
Yeah, but the thing is, season 4 didn't answer any of the mysteries from season 3.
No.
That's the problem, you know? Yeah. Like, if you gotta solve some of... Okay, take the Lord of the Rings trilogy, for example. It's a whole story, all right? The whole story is destroying the ring. But each book, each film has its own little thing that it has to solve. You know, so you have your story of the Fellowship. What happens to the Fellowship? You have the Two Towers. What happens with Saruman, you know, and the Horse Lords and stuff like that. Each story gives you some sort of conclusion. So there's at least a little bit of resolution before you continue the journey of the overall story of the ring being destroyed. And so what season 4 needed to do was give us something to solve and conclude, and it doesn't. Season 3 concludes the Chosen. You know, the Chosen are destroyed. Season 4, the technos don't really work as something they need to destroy, and it's not satisfying when you get to the end of the story because there were too many mysteries set up through the entire season and none of them are solved. So you feel like, okay, now I'm 2 seasons deep of no answers. You know, and that's a big problem in the storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We deserved better.
Yeah, basically. they seem to stumble every now and then onto a good storyline, and then they walk straight past it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know her. She doesn't even go here.
She doesn't go here.
I say that overall, I did enjoy it a lot more than season 3 rewatch. Sorry.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I agree with you, Dan.
That is fair. That is fair, because I think season 3 made a lot of people angry this time around. We remembered it in a certain way, and then it kind of let us down, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
And that baggy back end. Unforgivable.
Oh, yeah.
Big ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, before we jump into the finale, I was going to ask you, Matt, because it's great to have you finally for season 4. What are your highlights from this season?
I think, for me, because this was the season where I first started watching the show. Like I'd seen the tail end of a few season 3 episodes. So I was like, oh. So for me, it was very big. So I did enjoy that. And I do think that the technos brought that much needed kind of freshness to the show after, you know, what we've just been saying about the end of season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed how they felt more rounded as like an enemy, more characters that we, so they were able to be a bit more nuanced with the tribe and the interactions between members of the technos. So yeah, I really enjoyed the introduction of the technos as a whole.
No, that's very fair.
I'm gonna have to agree with you on that. That's as far as villains go, we've seen a lot more interaction and behind what's going on behind the big screen from the technos than we ever did before. Like with the Chosen, yeah, we saw Luke, we saw Jaffa, but not much more than that. And here there's so many more people that they let us explore, so I guess that's a bonus.
Even though all their weapons are disabled, this isn't going to be a walk in the park. They're on home turf. That means if we let up on the attack, even for a minute,
we can't. Once the attack begins, we can't let them regroup. It's all or nothing. As long as everyone understands that.
So, the Council of War is now in session. Celine, despite May scoffing in private with Trudy over her leadership, lays down the strategy for the upcoming battle to a group consisting of the Morats and Guyans. She is backed up by Amber, but it's Celine who is front and centre, standing atop the iconic Maul Fountain. So, panel, let's start with this. What did you make of the strategy meeting itself? Celine as a leader, and the obvious elephant in the room, which is Amber, because this leads us directly to the follow-up question. How successful do you think Celine has been this entire series in holding the Morats together in Amber's absence?
I don't think they've done a good job. I think this could have been incredibly poignant, especially given what's going to happen immediately in season 5 with her disappearing, her being kidnapped. But the point is, it doesn't work in the whole of the season, Celine as the leader. Even in this moment, the best words are given to Amber. And I'm not even denouncing that Amber shouldn't have those words. Those are words Amber would say, you know. Mm-hmm. She's earned those words.
Yeah.
She's earned the calm she's able to bring. She's earned the confidence she's able to give the group. They didn't give Celine that chance this entire season. They did nothing with her leadership. And so it feels obligatory that she's here. It's her last stand to sit a little higher than Amber. When the problem is the entire season, they kept undermining her as the leader every time Amber came back.
Everybody
again,
did. Yeah.
Not crapping on Amber. This is not Amber's fault. This is the writers. So this moment, it feels like an obligatory Oscar that somebody wins, not even for their best role, you know, but it's just like, oh, we owe you one. We should have given it to you for that movie 20 years ago, but we didn't, blah, blah, blah. So we're going to give it to you now. That's what this moment feels like with Celine. She's standing above Amber, giving her last hurrah as a leader, but it's obligatory. It hasn't been earned. They didn't get us to this point where we feel anything when she's there. And so it's just like, okay, whatever. you tried. You tried your best.
Yeah, I don't think any of them really look at her as leader either.
Yeah.
She's still just Celine, you know? But Amber, you know, having her say and being there, it definitely didn't surprise me that she was going to say something, you know, even though it was Celine's moment. It's Amber. It's how they write her. It, you know, they brought her back. She's here now. So let Amber do Amber's job, right?
And Celine has just been a placeholder this entire time, hasn't she?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think picking up something I think you said, Liz, a long time ago when we first started doing season four, which is you mentioned how, and I think Sabine also mentioned this, that it wasn't Celine as leader. It was just generic female leader. We didn't get any of her personality coming through in her leadership, what was important to Celine. It was just, yeah, the ultimate placeholder for Amber.
Not just that, because in the beginning, they actually seem to go with some of the things that would make sense for Celine, like her wanting a school and stuff.
But then
she completely forgot about it.
Amber would want that as well, though, wouldn't she?
Yeah, I guess, but it was Celine and Ryan who we saw teach children
true.
In the past.
Yeah.
So that made more sense for me coming from Celine.
Yeah.
Her backpedaling on that, though, just straight out annoys me.
It's the fact that they don't explore, like, okay, with Amber, with Bray, with Danny, with our leaders, what makes them stand out as leaders of the tribe, whether the fans like them or not. But what makes them stand out as leaders is that they, as you guys have said, they bring their personality, their own baggage, and their own hangups into what it is they want, what change they want to bring to the world. So what we remember about Dani is her guilt and how strung out she was about making the world right, because she carries the guilt of the world falling apart due to her father not telling the truth because he was trying to keep her alive. Okay. And that plays a huge part in the way she leads, mm-hmm. how she talks to people and the decisions she makes. Even the fact that she's willing to lie, steal and cheat to get the world back in order. And even Mega later on, even Ram, they're as leaders, their personality, their issues, their trauma plays a huge part in how they lead. They didn't give that to Celine. Those other characters, why we remember them as leaders and have opinions about them is because we actually get to hear their thoughts, their monologues on why they do the things they do, what is driving them, what they're trying to achieve. Celine doesn't get any of that. That's why, as Tamsin said so succinctly, she comes across as a generic placeholder. It doesn't feel like Celine and her hangups and her trauma and her baggage are trying to lead the city in any direction.
Yeah, it's like they pulled a name out of a hat out of the remaining mall rats that would make sense, and Celine got it.
Yeah.
Because there was nobody else.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Like, she was the only one logically that made sense and had any sort of sense in her head that people would vote for. Right. Yeah.
And as the Technos rightfully said with choosing her for leader, she looks like a pushover.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if that scene with May and Trudy at the start as well is almost like the writers knowing that, like it's a bit of a strange scene to add in otherwise, isn't it, because it doesn't really do anything other than saying yeah, we know Celine's about to speak, but yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, that's what I felt when they had May do that. It did feel less of a character moment for May, who is, you know, jealous and irritated by Celine, and more of a, let's acknowledge that this is the last time Celine is going to be playing the role of leader, because it doesn't actually make sense for May to comment on Celine as leader as though it's something new. And that's how she's talking, as if this is a new development that Celine is leading the tribe and she's got criticisms of it. Whatever her motivation is for that, it does feel more the writers acknowledging that they're aware that Celine has never really come across as the leader.
Yeah, it did feel like that.
And I find it just both interesting and annoying that May is the one to comment to Trudy about Celine having gone over to the Chosen before.
Yeah, but it's not a surprise coming from May. You know, May never looks at herself. She's always looking at everybody else, okay?
Yeah, but out of all the first...
To be the hypocrite, she has no problem being hypocritical. It's kind of who May is as a person.
I know, but out of all those people in the mall to make that comment too, for it to be the Trudy.
Kudos to Trudy.
May, though. Yeah, that's
Trudy
May.
Handled that very diplomatically. She Trudy's recognized immediately. Way, Trudy right? was like, ah, yeah, okay. Yeah, that I bet that is strange. Are you okay, May? You okay? Do you know who you're talking to?
Trudy has definitely grown up a lot. Like, her character development has been amazing from season one to now.
But then again, Trudy's got her daughter back. She's like, you guys can set this place on fire. I don't care. Right?
It's party time.
That's her whole attitude. Like, that's Trudy's attitude. Once she's got Brady back, she's just like, oh, I don't even care what we're doing about the Technos.
Now, I've got a question to ask about the staging around this. The actual the meeting, the Council of War. My question is, this is the first time Ebony's been really quiet when it comes to something like that. Does anybody else find that strange? She was not sat on the stairs.
Not at the moment, no.
I think given because of where she's at with everything.
Right, exactly. I think given what I'm not saying that their storyline they've given her makes sense. I'm saying that if that is the storyline. Her reaction to being pretty quiet through a lot of this does make sense. Yes. She's pretty distracted.
Yes.
At the moment.
That is exactly it. Yep.
Very, yeah.
So it's like, even though I'm like, the storyline is questionable, her reaction in the storyline makes perfect sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Especially when, you know, after that conversation or when she has that conversation with Amber. And you see how distracted she is. You're like, oh, okay, no, Ebony really isn't. She's not Ebony right now.
Yeah.
Just say something before we get to that. I want to say this. No. Like, Meryl Cassie's acting in those scenes, freaking phenomenal. She plays being distracted while trying to half listen, and you can see her eyes. Yeah. Like, oh my God, she knocked it out of the park. Seriously,
I told you there's some fantastic acting in this episode.
I just had to say that before I forgot. Yeah,
she was phenomenal.
Her conversation with Siva. I don't know if that was last episode or this one, but either way, when she had that conversation with Siva, I was like, "Oh, she's about to lose it. Oh no, oh no!" And it was great.
And we've rarely
she stepped up.
Honestly, question to the panel: has Ebony ever given anything less than an A+ performance?
No.
How stupid the script has been.
No.
So true. Yeah. Regardless of the script, she does always give it.
She has always come to play.
You have to be honest, though, and you have to say the cast are always delivering.
I can honestly say those two, though. Like, everybody else has their off days where I'm like, I think you could have done better with that. You could have, you know, come harder with that. But those two, I have to say, are never off. They've Trudy and Ebony have never had an off day. No matter how dumb or ridiculous the script is, they deliver whatever it is they need to deliver.
Yep.
Every damn time. I liked the meeting. I liked the way it was shot. I have criticisms, but not for the camera work. I think
it was really well
staged, and the camera moving around. It really felt like there were more people there than there are. And like, it felt like, okay, a council of war. I thought the stage, in fact, I wish that had been the season 4 cast photo of the kids staged that way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Something about it that really worked for me. I am upset that we still haven't involved the rest of the city. I'm like, where are the other tribal leaders? Where are the other tribes that were against the Technos? You know what I mean? Like, I hate that it's just the Mallrats and the poor Gaians who are just the NPC backups whenever the Mallrats have to fight something, and they pull the Gaians into their conflicts and then kill their people. You know what I mean? Like, I do hate that, but that's the only criticism I have, is I do wish this involved other people in the city who have been established to be against the Technos. And they've completely
in paradise?
Disappeared. They're all gone. They don't exist anymore.
I think that maybe, you know, it could be just to kind of establish that the rest of the city is kind of plague. They're not necessarily content, but the Technos are placating them in a way, you know, now that they're just kind of there. They're there, but they're not there, right? They're not like.
Yeah, but, and it was established, that Fried couldn't get as much of the former leaders to join up with them.
Yeah, because their people were happy with Paradise.
Yes, but the problem is that season four has kept bringing back adversaries and the populace. They've kept bringing them back. And that's why this doesn't, like, it doesn't come together at the end, because you can't periodically through the season establish that there are other people in the city who are against the Technos, who are willing to fight the Technos. Yeah, maybe the other tribe leaders weren't willing to work with Pride, but even after that, they were still kids against the Technos, who were still like making a fuss against the Technos. And it's like, where are they? There were people, remember when they had the stupid freaking hospital and these kids were willing to fight for the hospital and fight with the Mallrats for the hospital? Where are they? Where did all of those kids who are against the Technos?
They're in Paradise now.
They're stuck in Paradise.
Apparently Paradise sucked the rest of them all up.
It did. It must have, I guess. I mean, how else are the Mallrats going to be the saviors if a bunch of other city folk come in and do it too? Like,
we can't have that.
It does feel like the Mallrats are the only people who have problem with the Technos at this point. It's like, well,
yeah.
And it's like, okay, maybe they're the problem then.
Yeah.
What's the common denominator here, guys?
And that's a problem that carries into season five, because you get to season five, the Mallrats are the only ones who technically have a problem with the Technos. Everybody else is like, you know what they're asking
they got
for
water,
isn't too bad.
Food, and power,
right.
Video
the
game.
Season five is like a replay of season two, where the Mallrats are kind of the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, and in season five, like, they're the rebels, and it's like, nobody else really has a problem with what Mega's doing. You guys are the only ones making trouble. But we're supposed to care because you want this. It's supposed to be the right thing.
That's such a bad route to go down. Because if the Mallrats are the only people who care about what's going on, then why don't the Mallrats just leave? You know what I mean? It's like,
why don't they leave?
Yeah.
Go make your own city somewhere else.
There's plenty of forest out there.
Or if you want a storyline where the Mallrats are traumatized to the point that they feel they need to save the city, then you need to go down the Danny route.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Where they actually dabble with the fact that maybe Danny's in the wrong, but we understand her manic energy by why she's determined to still think she's in the right to do this, you know?
Yeah.
But season five doesn't ever touch on that. And this is the beginning of that. You see that there's nobody else fighting with the Mallrats to take down the Technos, because nobody else has a problem with the Technos. It's only the Mallrats who are like, nope, this is wrong and it needs to stop.
With their superiority complex, they think they know what's best for everyone. But I want to, question. Aside from the antidote, what have they actually done for the city? The Mallrats as a whole.
Bring power and chaos.
Let's be fair.
They've done things.
They brought back trade. They helped organize schools, clean up.
Was it just them?
It's about the effort. They've made lots of efforts, you know, they've had good intentions, but it hasn't been very good since season two, unfortunately.
No.
Okay. So for a little while now,
there was that whole chosen invasion.
They kind of threw things off a little bit, you know.
So basically, if they would have been decent people and actually gone after Brady and prevented the whole chosen drama, they might have actually done some good.
They could have been ahead of the game and already had all these things established before the Technos even got there.
But okay,
it was a side quest.
I guess where we are is that the entire city has been taken over by the Puppet Masters, except for the Mallrats.
Yes.
And that's my only criticism of this meeting, is that nobody, the Mallrats are the only ones, the only tribe
who have been able to resist
the Techno Paradise.
And I mean, the Gaians care because they were just attacked, you know, like that makes sense. So,
and I just wish there were other people who have been helping them. All
and
right.
Why were they attacked? First of all,
it's Amber's fault. Because she brought Jay and Ebony into their
Amber.
Tribe. It was all Amber's fault. Yes.
It's always Amber.
Okay.
I'm not saying that, Sabine. I'm just saying that's why the Guardians were attacked.
That's definitely what I heard.
So do you think an easy fix for this would have been just a shot of people in that cafe on Paradise or in the bar on Paradise so we could have established?
Or maybe that should have been established that they're losing allies to Paradise. That should have been. If you're not going to have them here, establish that they're losing allies to Paradise.
Yeah, show us where they are.
Just bring in some extras. You know, the same people who've been helping the Mallrats this whole time. You got to pick one or the other, but you can't leave them out entirely.
Yeah, good point.
Did we have in the previous episode, did that not like start with this really sort of wide shot of the empty city streets and then everyone vegging out in Paradise?
Yeah everybody is. Yeah, and that's why that's what makes sense, or the most sense, is that it's just they're busy.
But again, I don't think that does a good enough job to establish the people who have been against technos and technology just disappearing and succumbing to it. You at least have to address that they've succumbed to it, that you've lost those allies, the people who were helping at the hospital. Even when the mall rats finally moved it back into the mall, where did all those helpers go? Mm. They were willing to defend the mall. You know, like, where did they go? Like, you have to acknowledge that you don't have them as allies anymore, that Paradise has taken them too. It's like a zombie survival film. You have to acknowledge that you're the only ones left because everybody else has been infected.
Yeah, or they should have just shown us that the technos took them.
Something. If you're not going to get them to be in this shot, willing to fight, then all that establishment of them willing to fight with you and them not being here now, you have to acknowledge it. Where are they?
And that gets us back to the start of the season. Where are they disappeared?
It's like, it's such an easy fix to just be like, to acknowledge we've lost our ally. Paradise is taking everybody. We're the only holdouts somehow. We're the only holdouts. Fine, but you need to acknowledge that that's the case. Despite having two addicts living in the mall. You're the only ones who've been able to resist it. Where the frick is Sammy? Am I the only one?
He is on the stairs.
Mm-hmm. I completely forgot about him.
Like, where the frick is Sammy? Him and Mouse have been arguing about Paradise every episode, even the last one. And it's like, he has nothing to say this episode about any of this? Where the frick is Sammy?
No, he's just sat there.
It's another storyline that went nowhere. Mouse and Sammy fighting about Paradise.
Yep.
Sammy being all for it and Mouse being like, don't do it. Blah, blah. And she's so emotional about it and them fighting about it. And now we're at the final battle where we're going to destroy Paradise. And Sammy got nothing to say.
Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I'd also throw in Pride as well. I mean, does he have mixed feelings about this?
Apparently not, because remember, May was the problem. Oh, remember?
Yeah. She was the problem. It was May.
Yeah.
It was always
totally cured now, and it's fine.
It was all May. Yeah. May has always been the problem.
Yeah,
and that's
there's
why
no
he's
temptations
been
anymore.
The worst person ever. It's all May.
That's why he could never love her. Okay.
I'm going to use that excuse when I get things wrong at work from now on. It was May.
It was May.
It's got to be May. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. I'm sorry, Matt.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you get us all
bad.
Together.
I haven't been here in a while, so
we've missed you so much.
I just heard he set a trap for the Mallrats.
You weren't supposed to know about this.
You programmed me. What was I meant to do when they arrived? Watch them get blasted.
As Mega prepares the technical leadership for the imminent Mallrat attack, Tysan finds herself frozen out and demands to know what's going on. Doubtful of her loyalty, Java takes pleasure in telling her the truth, and a tearful Tysan confronts Mega. And it's here that we learn that he was the one who reprogrammed her. So yeah, what do you make, panel, of what we learn about Tysan's situation?
But why?
Justice for Tysan.
Why?
I'm telling you, there is no way that Tysan Okay, I believe Tysanne would join the Technos if it meant she could get to her family or help her family. Okay, I'll buy that. Okay. I will not buy that that's determined Tysanne would be like blow her cover the minute she finds out that the Technos are going to wipe out her family. The very freaking moment. I don't buy that. No, she wouldn't. Yeah, she'd hold it together.
There's hard mode, Tysanne. Come on.
Yes. There's no way she would immediately fall apart and blow her cover. And be like, what were you going to do?
She would have found some way to get a message to them.
Yep.
Yes.
Something.
I mean, she found a way to get Brady, so she would have found a way.
Tysanne can play the long game, okay? So we know she can get lost in the sauce. And there's just no way she would blow it this easily.
Yeah. And do such irrational things.
And let Mega know that she's compromised.
Let Mega know, of all people.
Of all people. The person who programmed her, this has apparently been her goal, to get back into the city this whole time, play along with the Technos. And immediately, as soon as she finds out my family's going to be massacred, they're walking into a trap, and just, she's literally their only hope, if that's the case.
And that's
true that they're walking into a trap. She's their only hope. And you're telling me she'd blow her cover that fast? I don't buy it. Justice for Tysanne.
Yeah.
He's cooking.
No, I agree.
This is the girl who, you know, who risked everything by saving Brady.
Who burned the antidote and kept it to herself.
Because she didn't trust anyone else.
Tysanne can be downright sociopathic when she has to be.
Oh, okay? She was reprogrammed, all right, okay?
I don't buy that. I don't buy that she would break that way and let Mega know that she's emotionally compromised so that she can be taken away. Now she's no help to her family. What was the whole point of this?
She's never been emotionally compromised, ever, even in her right mind. So
she has been, but not like this.
Yes. So, like, he reprogrammed.
Think about it. When the Guardian was doing his stuff, when the Guardian would reveal the crap he was going to do, Tysanne, you could see her struggling emotionally, but she kept her head.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Because she was thinking of the bigger picture.
Yes.
So, I'm in the city now. I'm in the hotel. Bigger picture is over. Mission accomplished.
Yep. She threw it all out the window. No.
And I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't have had that scene play out in a very similar way, with her having been captured trying to escape and her brought in to the HQ. And then, you know, the conversation with Mega goes the same way. But we find out that Tysanne was trying to escape. She was trying to get to the Mall Rat.
Was trying to get a message to the Mall Rats when she learns that they're going to be screwed over.
Anything. You know,
something.
Hold on. To play devil's advocate, what I felt was going on here was that because she had been reprogrammed and she had been very loyal to the Technos, suddenly seeing Trudy brought back the old Mall Rat memories, which is why she's suddenly emotionally compromised. That's kind of how I saw it. But
yep.
But I still don't buy that she wouldn't. She's had time.
She wasn't composed enough. She wasn't able to.
But that was last episode, Lance. That was
a whole other episode ago. Okay.
You know how time works in this season.
But anyway, now she's trying to balance, my techno loyalties with my old Morat alliance. So that's all playing in her head right now because of the programming. So,
her intelligence plays a part in how to handle this.
None of it is gone.
I know, but
The two counteract each other.
Be smart, we don't know how deep that brainwashing is.
Be messing with your head.
And I wonder why we don't know how deep that brainwashing. Oh, that's because the Tysanne plotline came out of freaking nowhere.
Out of nowhere. I didn't even realize it was happening. And I see her on the screen and I started jumping and I go, oh crap. Because there she was. And I didn't realize how long her little storyline lasted.
Well, Ram's known about her for a long time, so...
Apparently.
Oh my goodness.
And she looks just like Ebony and her sisters. So tell me why.
Why he didn't try to capture her, too. I guess Mega just got to her first.
Or was he supposed to reprogram her for Ram?
I swear. Ram saying, I like that Tysanne. Like, what the... Yes. Everybody knows her. Everybody knows her.
I don't know. Maybe Tysanne was supposed to come back for season 5, but something happened and Michelle couldn't do it. So they had to scrap their ideas. That's the hope I'm going to give myself. That it wasn't
I don't even
just
think that was it, because
thing.
She was still contracted to do the show Neighbors. They knew she was going to be able to juggle both of these shows.
Unfortunately, knew,
and
yeah.
To be fair, she wasn't gonna leave Neighbors to stay on the tribe.
They knew when they brought Tysam back that this wasn't going to be a longevity plotline. They didn't put any thought into it. She was the jingled keys to get you to come back to season 5. That's all it was.
And it's such a waste.
And you'll never see her again.
Because you could have had such a great storyline with her, even a short one, that could have given us a lot of closure with the other characters as well. Especially if you went down that reprogramming route and you kind of saw what had happened to Tysam. And yeah, it could have been so good and given a lot of the fans closure as well. But no.
Yeah, because if that could happen to someone like Tysam.
Yeah.
But they don't put any thought into it. She's there to jingle keys, to make you come back, and then they immediately get rid of her under the most ridiculous circumstances, which they could have written better. A rewrite would have completely fixed her getting caught, trying to get the news to the mall rats. Even with Lance's idea that she was fully programmed as a techno, then she's emotionally compromised when she sees, you know, Trudy and all of, you know, she's battling these two loyalties. It still could have been written better. And then, you know, Mega catches her and he tells her, you failed this test, and she's taken away. And Ram already established, if she doesn't, you know, pan out, we're going to delete her. You know, you've already established that. But you can't have her just break under the pressure like that. That's not Tysam, even if she's emotionally compromised. That's not what she would do. Okay. She would try to tell her, she would not go to Mega and tell him, like, oh, you're going to just kill my friends. No, she would put it together. Like, of course, that's what the technos do. What can I do to help my friends, and get caught and then get captured, taken away, blah, blah, blah. You know,
do we see her again?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so, okay? And the only thing that we get is that look that Mega gives her right as he's walking past her at the end, and that's it.
Yeah, and again, jingled keys make you come back to season 5. That's all it's for, to make you question.
Yeah, and we're meant to think that there's something maybe possibly romantic between them.
I didn't think necessarily romantic, but he was just kind of, you know, thinking, like, in my head, it's like, oh, we can't have that.
See, I read it as possible romance.
I don't get that from Mega at all in anything that he does.
Well, no, so season 4, because we don't know, like, I think you've got to judge it on, we really don't know his character yet.
I know, that's me metagaming the show, you know?
I think they were just aiming for the jingled keys of Tysam being
an
interruption to the Tysam. Yeah. Sorry, it's Tysam being an interruption to the Lex and Siva relationship, and add the look from, you know, Mega, and it's all meant to just make you come back. It's just meant to give you a big question mark. What does that all mean? And they had no intention of filling it out or answering it at all.
They had every intention of making us wanting to come back, hoping there would be others that would return as well, though.
I didn't even want to stay. Why would I want to come back?
And I was going to say as well that the way that Tysam and Lex greet each other, that feels like we're keeping the door open for Lex and Siva as well. They're not going to kiss. They're not going to hug. They're going to hold hands, because that's what you do when you haven't seen your wife and you thought she might be dead.
Of course. But again, he hasn't earned anything with her.
No.
But I'm thinking of, like, myself, the other Tysam Lex fans that are watching.
I agree. I'm saying that Lex, as a Tysam Lex fan, and you know I am, Chanson, you know I'm with you.
Famously.
Even as a fan of them, he has not earned a real moment with his wife.
No, I agree 100%. I made a comment about how he's, you know, playing happy families with this woman while he's wearing his wedding ring, and it just drives me crazy.
I mean, he literally just remembered her existence an episode ago. So, I mean, like, he hasn't earned a moment between them. It's a jingle. It's just jingle, jingle, jingle. Come see what happens. And then nothing is going to happen that's relevant.
My brain is just going, how much did Tysam know about Lex and Siva?
She does. She literally comments on it. She literally comments on it.
She's very astute.
Yeah.
It's like he must have known that one of Ram's wives has left him for Lex.
Not even just that. It's just she's not stupid.
There's body
she
language.
Knows the man she married. And yeah. That's why she's like, so I think things need to have changed for you too. You know? And he's just like, no. And she's like, Bish, I know. I know you.
Lex, I know you. You literally, like, were in the woods for a day with Ebony and you were, it's fine.
I know who you are, baby. I know. Yeah. I know who I married. And I'm letting you know in this moment. It's okay. I'm so open.
I'm the same way.
We can get past this. We both have had that kind of like open interpretation of what monogamy means. Got to be in the same room for it to count. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Different tribe don't count.
You know? Oh, that's what she knew. She was like, I get it. I get it. I'm not holding it against you. I was gone. It's cool.
Hey, we got the same hair though.
I'm still open.
Yeah.
If you still open, what you doing later?
Never seeing you again. No.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Lance. You're not going to get a hold of this episode, and I'm not even going to
try. Sorry.
I'm not even going to try. It's fine. No, I was just thinking, like, the whole reprogramming bit didn't even add anything to her little story here, because she could have just been... Like, we've all said she could have just joined the Technos because of her worth, but their reprogramming did nothing. It adds nothing.
Like, we don't really see her as that full, you know, like, fully reprogrammed techno. We just immediately see her jump into...
back into...
She's with Trudy, right?
Exactly. She's just Tysan, who cares about her tribe. And
did she really reprogrammed, or did she play the part?
If you really want to sell the idea that she's programmed, or reprogrammed, sorry, then maybe she shouldn't have an emotional outburst at learning her friends
maybe
are all going to be massacred.
10 minutes into it, you know?
Maybe she should have a cold reaction. We learn later that she was faking it, blah, 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 or whatever. But if you want to sell the idea that this woman has been reprogrammed, you cannot give us a Tysan who shows up, immediately responds to seeing Trudy, is like, takes Trudy's concerns seriously, goes out of her way to find Trudy's child, like, and be excited at seeing Brady. Like, you cannot sell that and then tell us she's been reprogrammed as a techno, not to care about these verts. What does reprogramming mean then at that
what
point?
What does it mean? Yeah.
Sorry, my brain does, well, actually caring about Trudy and Brady does feel like a reprogrammed Mallrats because they don't give a crap about her.
I mean, you could also have gone so far as to have Tysan there for us to have seen her and for her to be going by a completely different name. Because they've taken that away from her as well.
Yeah, like, it's just like, oh yeah, Tysan. That Tysan. Tysan's pretty cool. That's all right. Girl.
I'm just wondering if the whole, like, reprogramming aspect and this reintroduction of Tysan, do you think maybe that's something that was originally part of Chloe's storyline that's had to be rewritten and, like, who can we find to bring and do this bit that was going to be a big part of the ending?
Well, why didn't they do it with May? If you're gonna, okay, we know Chloe left unexpectedly and then they dragged in May. Why didn't they reprogram May?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, Chloe showing back up as a techno and showing back up with Brady would make so much more sense than this.
But yeah, like, I get what you're saying, Matt. I just don't think that much thought has been put into any of these storylines. I really don't. I really do not think they thought when they started season 4, they had any idea where they were going towards the end. And so that's why it's like all of this stuff that's happening at the end is just been pulled out of the ether. It wasn't like, oh, this is what we're trying to get to, you know, and so that this can work. They've never laid the breadcrumbs for reprogramming or people joining the technos, you know, or anything like that into the last couple of episodes. And so it's just like, I don't know what the plan ever was. There's only a couple of things where I'm like, maybe Mega's storyline was supposed to be Ved's, you know. But otherwise, I'm just like, honestly, this is the one season where you cannot predict what direction they were going to go in. Because I have no idea if they knew where they were going at all.
Mm.
It's like walking a cat. Who knows where you're going to end up, man?
But that's been the entire problem of season 4, though, hasn't it? And really, since the end of season 3, we pick up storylines. We don't know where we're going with them. actors decide to leave, then we're stuck. We don't know how to maneuver out of this storyline. We don't know what to do next. And it feels like everything is being written immediately on the day. We don't know what's happening or what it might lead to or what the storyline could potentially be.
So let's pretend it's improv.
Every episode is, we'll do it live. We'll do it live.
Yes.
No rehearsal needed because we don't know where this is going. We don't know how relevant what we're doing at the moment is going to be. And we don't know if we're going to keep it or drop it, how much meaning it's going to have. But this is what we're doing today.
Yes.
Just to be clear, that takes so much out of the cost.
Mm.
That makes her effort even greater.
Yes, it does. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Because as an actor, and you don't know where your character is going at all, there's no real through line to what your character is doing, and still to show up and give it 100% every time. Oh my word. Kudos. And
especially at that age.
And you made a really good point, Liz, when you said about Lord of the Rings and having a story that you want to tell. And I think the failure of season 4 has really been they didn't know what story they wanted to tell. And that has been the problem, for me anyway, is that we got lost because there was no guide to take us anywhere. We didn't know where we were going.
Part of me wonders how much of that ended up being last minute due to broadcasters not approving of certain things.
Yeah, but they've worked around that before.
Yeah, and
knowing where you're going, like, you can still edit things, but you need to at least know what the exit is. And I don't think they knew what the exit was.
You'd have a spec script as well. Right. And, you know, even if they had editorial approval, I mean, so if that's the case, then what you need, they would give you guidelines about what they would and would not accept in terms of the content. So, you know, going in where you have to pitch it at. So then just don't write those things so that at the last minute you have to take them out and it becomes disjointed.
Not to mention, remember how the season starts. Ram is having an orgy with two imaginary girls.
Yeah.
Which apparently was totally acceptable.
Exactly. So they clearly, there's a lot they could get away with.
And let's not forget that this episode comprises of us watching all of our fan favorites get gunned down.
Yep, they had to edit into lasers, but they could do it.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to let that be an excuse for the mess of this season and its writing.
All right, let's head on to that big Series 5 tease. Because earlier that same morning, Ebony is awoken by a nightmare of Zoot, which continues to distract her throughout this entire episode. Most notably when Amber comes to find her to confess that though she does have feelings for Jay, she won't act on them. See, panel, how did you react to the possible return of Zoot and the effect of Amber's big confession?
Okay, so I just want to say,
I mean, this is my highlight.
Oh, you go, Maggie.
Oh, I'm excited about the Zoot thing. I mean, it is drawn out and whatever, but I love Zoot. It's fine. Mm-hmm. My only thing with Amber is like, why? Why? That's my only question is, I don't know if I missed something. Okay, but like, why did she need to tell Ebony this? Why was
I think that's a good point, Maggie, because I was going to say, based on the conversation that we just saw in the previous episode, so the last time that Amber and Ebony have any interaction, Ebony tells Amber that she will kill her if any harm comes to Jay. And then Amber walks up to her and is like, oh, by the way, Yeah, I love him. I won't act on him because I think I'll always have feelings for Bray. What?
had she just said that, well, no, I will make sure he doesn't get hurt because I actually
care about him.
Yeah, but
I got feelings for your man, but don't worry.
Don't worry, I'm not you.
You know, I had a baby with the man you loved before this, but don't worry. Like, because it had to insert Amber in somewhere, I guess. And I mean, I guess what better way to show that Ebony is completely distracted right now by than having someone or woman tell her that they love her, they're her man, you know?
That's the only thing it's serving, isn't it? It's just not done a bit awkwardly.
I mean, that's true. That is true.
Yeah. Her not caring, yeah.
I'm going to give the writers props on that one. Yeah. I feel like that was purposely done.
Yeah. And that's the only reason.
But where does that sit for Amber, though? Because I understand the Ebony equation in this.
I don't know, man.
The Amber equation.
It's Amber.
Doesn't make any sense.
Amber can do whatever Amber does, okay?
No, the writers had already said since, what, two episodes back that Amber suddenly falling deep in love with Jay and this is going to be the relationship going forward. They just decided for us.
The thing I've ever heard in my
even
life.
Even though it makes no sense to her journey, her story, but hey, this is, not we're going to be forced to get it, but.
And the other thing is, like, Amber is a good reader of people, let's be honest. And Ebony having said, oh, by the way, I'm going to kill you. I mean, you don't then walk up to him and go, hi. So I love him, but don't worry. As Maggie said, I won't do anything about it because, you know, I'm still in love with this other guy.
Because, you know, I'm not like you and I won't
read
poison
the room.
People.
Read the room, Amber. Read the room.
I'll say what I like about this scene. I love that if we're going from the last episode of Ebony basically saying, look, I know you've been flirting with my boy and you're the reason we're back in the city. Okay. And I seen the way you've been acting with him, okay? If anything happens to him, I'm going to kill you, right?
I'm
and you saw the look on Amber's face, like, okay, this isn't fun anymore. He's not worth dying for, you know? So it made sense for me that Amber at this point is like, look, hey, girl, hey. I kind of like your guy, but not enough to die for him. I'm still holding out for my boo thing, my baby daddy. So, like, don't hold me responsible for what happens, okay? I just want you to know I'm not an issue. And I like that. It made sense to me that Amber's like, I'm not trying to die for him, okay? So, hey, even if she's lying, that's a smart thing to do. You got to clear your plate, okay? I love Ebony's acting. I think it's fantastic. I think it's amazing. Like, she's, Meryl came to play. She came to play, even if the storyline inevitably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. In this scene, she is fantastic. I'm just as engaged with her as Amber is. Cause it's like, what's going on with you? You've literally threatened my life last night and today you don't care what I'm saying about your man, like the man you're willing to end my life over.
You're not even staring me down a little bit.
Right. Like, you don't even seem to care. Like, I could tell you I want him and we slept together in the pantry and you don't seem to be bothered by anything.
Yeah, like,
I'm saying, I think this is so well acted. And I actually, I don't actually mind the idea. Okay. I know in shows that are aimed at this age group, sometimes in the later seasons, the only way to make it interesting is to bring in the supernatural. And that's what we think this is. You got to admit, at this point, I don't know about you guys, but I was like, why is Ebony hearing voices and seeing weird things? Like, where did this suddenly come from? And it's not as if Ebony hasn't had trauma episodes in the past, right?
Yeah.
Something dug it up, right? It doesn't pan out. In the end, like, we know, season 5, it's like, it doesn't make sense. But I will say the introduction of it isn't horrible for a show of this caliber and the direction it's going. My real problem is it's retroactive. My problem with all of this is that when we get the answer as to why Ebony is seeing the things she sees and hearing what she hears doesn't actually work. We find out later that Ebony was given a dose of paradise. And that's why she's seeing Zoot, hearing Zoot, all this stuff. But please explain to me when that could have happened.
Yes. When was this?
You're asking my questions they don't want answers for.
Well, I want answers.
When was the last time Ebony was in the vicinity of the technos and their technology where this could have been done to her? This was, you got to remember, it was before she and Jay left the city.
Went to the forest.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the only way this could have happened was back then, and it was on a delay timer, apparently. All right. Yeah. What if this has happened to her in the woods or on the run? Okay. But it had held off this entire time. The only suspect you can even get is Siva doing this to her, but Siva wasn't involved in it at this time.
No. Yeah.
So when did this freaking happen? When was the last, like,
it was Jay. That's why we need to
I was thinking Jay. The same thing. It was Jay.
Yeah, was it Jay? It's even playing the long game.
It is the long game.
But we know that Jay's an innocent bunny rabbit, you know. But yeah, like the last time she was in the vicinity of somebody who could have done this to her was when they came back to the city and she ran into Java, but nothing happened in that scene, you know? Unless you want to imply that in that scene, Java managed to wrestle her sister down and got a headset on her, and then Ebony doesn't even remember that's what happened between G and Java. You know what I'm saying? It's like, when did this happen?
You're doing the work of the writers. Yeah. Trying to piece it together, and they should be doing that work for us.
Right. And so that's my big complaint. I actually kind of like the idea of, because we've already established in previous seasons that Zoot is a trigger and a trauma for her. And I'm actually pretty cool with that, like it coming back to mess with her. But it's like, when did she get this dose of paradise?
Or what else triggered this?
And it had to be the paradise, because season 5 confirms this isn't a trauma response. This is the paradise. At some point, she was given a dose by her sister Java. And it's like, when was the last time she saw Java? As I said, was when she came back to the city with Amber and Jay, ran into Java in the alleyway. And you want us to believe that that's when Java wrangled her and Ebony has no memory of it.
The only one who was in a position to do this with the type of headset that Mega later has for Ram would have been Jay.
And I actually would have liked that, even if it doesn't make sense for Jay's storyline. It's just because it's like the only ones in the vicinity of her since she left the Technos and hasn't been around any of them are Jay or Siva. And it's like the way you've written the story, neither of them would have been involved in this and done it to her.
Like, why would they do this? Yeah. What purpose?
Yeah. Well, Jay is sick of her, so.
So, yeah. But that's my big complaint. It's retroactively, it sucks. But in the moment, I think it's actually pretty cool. And it's filmed really well. Even her nightmare, I think, is really great. It has little touches of her original nightmares of Zoot in season 2. You know, the color grading, the sound design, the lighting, you know, all of it and the way it feels when he's around. Everything's askew. The lighting is sharp and angular when he comes into the picture. He is an uneasy presence. It's spooky. It's scary. That's what he makes her feel. And so I do like all of that. And that it's haunting her everywhere she goes. She keeps hearing these sounds and seeing things. Even like the fact that the wind is blowing.
Yes.
Like the dreamlike quality. I kind of like that, you know, that something otherworldly is happening to her. I just hate it retroactively because it's like, okay, so what started her and this journey?
And what is the purpose? Why did we get here and how?
I have to say as well that it sort of impregnates the scenes with a sense of doom as well, because when she first has that nightmare, you get the sense that she feels like, or maybe I read this in it, that everything is going to go so badly that they are going to die. And this is why she's seeing Zoot.
I'll give this a season 4. I felt that. What you just said, Tamsin, makes me think this is where I want to give season 4 a little credit. And you guys know how painful that is for me. But I always give credit where it's due. Seriously, I feel like this sense of doom for what's coming next is more effective than the Guardian just saying, oh, the real bringers of chaos are coming. Yeah. Like that, I don't give a crap, okay?
Because
by that point, it was like, is this guy crazy or not? Make up your mind where he is in his headspace.
How do I feel about
exactly? I don't give a crap when the Guardian tells, like, the real bringers of chaos are coming. I thought you were insane. All right. Now you're not. Now you're lucid, blah, blah, blah. But Ebony having these creepy dreams, and even the scenes with lead up to the, like, their attack felt dreamlike, like as if Ebony was reliving her own nightmare. The way Jay tells her everything's going to be fine, it completely ignoring her note of caution and her concern, felt like a dream. I felt like that was more effective and bringing on the doom of season 5 than season 3 tried. I'll give you that, Matt.
It kind of does. It stays with you. She's seen this, and I totally, not when she was with Ebony, when she was with Amber, but when she woke up and she was like, Jay just told me.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, she thinks she's going to die. She thinks they're going to die. And this is why she's seeing Zood.
Yeah.
And about to attack as well when she says to Jay, no, come on, let's go. It's like, oh, what's going to go wrong?
Her spider sense.
The way he answers her feels like someone in your dream who's not taking you seriously.
Late. Yeah.
You know, where he's just like, ah, everything's cool. Everything's fine. And she's just like, no, it's not. You know what I mean? I just think that does a better job of bringing on a sense of doom and gloom for the next season than season 3 tried to do with the Guardian.
Yeah, I agree.
I had a question about that, but we'll get to it. Yeah, because the way Jay played that, I was very confused. He was like smiling throughout her whole, trying to pour her emotions onto him. And he was just grinning. I was like,
right.
This feels weird.
It was like a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's like when you're trying to run and you're going in slow motion or you're in pudding or something, you know, there's just nobody's reacting to what's very obviously wrong around you in a nightmare. And I wonder,
if that was intentional, that was very well
it
done.
It was really
a big if.
They play around with the dreamlike quality in this episode. I'll give them credit. Sometimes it works really well. Sometimes not so much.
I have been stuck in Teams meetings that felt a bit like this. <You know? laughs>
This is never going to end.
Yeah, exactly.
It's my personal hell.
I've been reliving this day for 37 years.
Yeah.
And I it kind of reminds me back in season 1 when they wanted to play with something artsy, and the episode with Sasha and the Pied Piper. And how dreamlike it was with, you know, Bray reading a story to the children and narrating. And it was just very artistic. And there's something about this episode that I really enjoy, that they play with what is real and not real, which is not a bad setup for the next season. Better than it was in this season. The real and unreal, I think, is handled better in the next season. And it's not a bad setup to where we're going. We think we're winning. But we're just following exactly the breadcrumbs we're meant to, you know?
And it makes you wonder, is that, I mean, admittedly, she feels that this is wrong because of her sightings of Zood and how easy it's all been, et cetera, et cetera. But also, you could argue, because it feels like a larger trap, maybe. And if it's one thing we know about Ebony, she is a survivor. Her spider senses are telling her, no, this is wrong. And the way that, like you said, everybody is acting, they're all sort of, they've fallen into, Mega's going to help us. Everything will be fine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to just pretend season 5 is a dream, it's perfect. Like, think about it. What if season 5 doesn't actually even happen? It's that Ram 1 and got them all in the reality space.
Yeah.
And it's just the Matrix. Give them challenges because it's the only way to keep them satisfied. Because if you made them happy, they would know something was wrong. But if they are always fighting against them, they'll feel, you know, like, oh, this is normal. What if season 5 just never happened? Ram 1 at the end.
All right. That's my new headcanon.
Because season 5, we all know season 5 is crazy. It's bonkers. It's off the wall.
I don't want to talk about it. Not right now.
Everybody's haywire in season 5. So, like, what if Ram wins? What
is season 5?
They were all captured. They were all thrown in helmets. And season 5 is just in their head. Well, he's using them for batteries to power his reality space.
And he's going to live forever draining their life force.
As we gear up towards the crucial hour, we see several moments between characters. Amber comforts a frightened mouse, Patch and Dee exchange gifts, and Lex decides that he will, of course, join the battle after all. So yeah, just briefly, what did you make of these scenes?
Okay, I love the scene between Amber and Mouse, just because they're both fantastic actresses and they've got wonderful chemistry, mm-hmm. and it's adorable and
it
sweet.
It was so cute, and I love to it. See it.
Yes. But I'm like, wait, when did Mouse get such an attachment to Amber of all people? Like,
yeah, I was wondering that.
Yeah.
I'm like, they keep showing Mouse having this attachment to Amber, and it's like, but why? Why does she have one to her? Even season 5 will continue this idea. When they come back from the battle, Mouse immediately jumps into Amber's arms because Selene is conveniently missing at that point. But it just seems weird. It's like, when was this established that Mouse looks at Amber as a protector when it was literally Selene who adopted she and her brother off the street and has been playing mommy to her this whole time? I love the scene. As much as I love the scene, I wouldn't trade the scene because they're both so good in it and it's so natural and organic. It's like, why isn't this Selene? Why has Selene abandoned another child?
Because that's what Selene does.
I know. She does.
It made me feel about like that, you know, like about that scene, or it made me think about that scene with Amber and Chloe and the missing teddy bear in the beginning. That's what it gave me vibes of, you know? It's because Amber comes back and now she's like, I'm your mother now.
But see, that's what made Selene season 1 and Amber season 1 so well. Like, okay, Amber had a mother of the tribe, like sensibility where everybody looked to her to get things done, even to the point where it drove her crazy.
Yes.
But Selene had her own niche with the kids that was specific to her and the kids. Yes, you trusted Amber to take care of the whole tribe, but when the kids wanted comfort and attention, they could depend on Selene. And I don't know why they couldn't have done that, continued that with Selene and Amber with Mouse, where like Selene is still, you know, the one you go for the hugs, and because Selene still did all of that, even though Amber ran the tribe.
Selene is mama and Amber is mother.
Right, you know, and so I just didn't understand why Selene has to lose one of the most integral parts of her without exploring it. They could have explored it, but they don't.
Well, how is she going to go down this path in season 5 if she's this super important mommy? She can't be irresponsible.
But I mean, you could have spent the entire of season four exploring Selene rejecting some of her motherly attributes because she's trying to leave.
But that would be too in depth.
You're right. It would have been. I'm asking too much. I'm just saying you could have had both. You could have had both where Mouse feels safer on Amber because she has a commanding presence and seems to get everybody under a row. But when she wants a hug, she goes to Selene. But what has Selene done as a mother to this child for ages? You know? And so I was like, I love this scene. But it's like, where did she form this attachment to Amber?
Why
it feels unearned.
It's unearned.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
And like, you could have had both, or explore why Selene is retreating from her more matronly duties because she thinks
keeps
that's
putting
what
it off on
she
everybody.
Needs
yeah.
to become be the strong leader or something. You know what I mean? Or something. Because remember, in season 1, every time motherly duties were needed to be handled, Amber was like, Selene, can you handle that, please? Mm-hmm. Because I'm trying to keep this tribe together. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was. You know, like, she's the CEO, but she'd always be like, Selene, can you take care of the daycare?
She delegated,
You know, and it was very clearly Selene's spot. And it's like, even though she keeps losing children, we should explore why she's not mothering Mouse.
She keeps asking people, someone's got to say, you know, someone's got to look after Mouse. To everybody but her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you and Pride, I mean, we already know he's an absentee dad, but you
both can't count on him
to play happy families with her and her brother. And you've just given them another broken family.
You can't just adopt a child and then give them back.
Oh my gosh. And it feels unearned. Yeah. And I'm just like, this is such a great scene, but where the frick did it come from?
You know, I could have seen it with Trudy. Had it been Trudy, I might not be, you know, I would have been like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. She's a mom. She's, you know, a mother. I know it's Amber's a mom too, but like.
Is she?
Is she? Yeah. Is exactly. Thank you.
Trudy knows.
Thank you so much.
And Trudy knows what it's like.
Yeah, you know, so like with Trudy, I could, I mean, I don't know, because it's Amber and they've got to establish Amber as this dominant figure again, you know, this dominant female figure in the tribe again, because she's back, right?
I just think it would have been more poignant if Celine has this last moment with Mouse before she's kidnapped and then goes downhill. You know, to reestablish what their relationship was before Mouse loses her too. She loses Pride. She loses Celine. I love this scene. I want to reiterate. Amber and Mouse are fantastic together. What do I have to do? Aggie!
Who do you have to do?
What do I have to do to convince you? I do love them together, but it's not earned, as Tamsin said.
No, I agree. Completely.
I think the other thing for me in this scene with it being Amber is that it then kind of ties back into what we're saying about like Ebony's doom and gloom, and then everything with Amber and with Jay is then being like super positive and just adding to that like counterpoint and that sort of as an audience member thinking, oh, something's not quite right here, something's going to go wrong.
What did everyone think about Lex? The fact that he wasn't going to join them in the battle initially.
It was weird. I thought it was established that he was going to when he says, it's Siva's fight, that means it's mine. And it's like, the next morning, he's like, of course I'm going. And it's like, you guys didn't discuss this last night? Really?
Oh, we needed that scene, really.
Did no one read between the lines?
It's your fight, babe. I'll be sitting here rooting for you, though. What did you gather from him saying, it's Siva's fight, so it's my fight? I thought that meant, I'm going to be there. And no, there was no discussion. It's not till the next morning she even knows that her boothang's going with her. Seriously?
But it does feel, though, that we did need a scene, though, where he does decide.
Yes, but I just think it's weird that it happens the next morning when they're about to fight. And it's like, you and Siva didn't talk about this all last night? At all? Really?
After your grand declaration?
Yeah. Hey, exactly. I just thought that was weird. I thought that was very weird. It's kind of like when any movie you watch where they have to skip time and then somebody says something, you're like, that would have been discussed back in the car.
That was part of the last conversation.
I figure, like, I agree with you, Tamsin. We needed a scene where he says, yes, I'm going to be fighting with you. But it just seems weird that it happens the next morning when they're about to go to fight. It's like, you and Siva, what did you talk about last night? Did you do anything last night? They didn't talk.
That's the other thing, though, as well. We kind of needed that scene, a scene between Lex and Siva, where it established that he is going to come, and she already knows, not like that, he's going to come and fight, and that's established, and you have this nice moment between them, and then later you've got Tysan's turn back up, and it's just something for the audience to be like, oh my goodness, she's back, what's this gonna mean, that sort of thing. So we've established this closeness between Siva and Lex again, and then we've got this later scene with Tysan that would have made some emotional impact on the audience, because they would say, oh well, I'm a fan, I've got stakes now, that sort of thing.
I just feel like it could have been moved, the scene where he confirms he's going to go into the fight. It could have been more of an intimate scene between he and Siva, or at the very least not have it be a surprise to Siva, you know, like when he tells Pride, I'm going to fight, Siva's like, yeah, my man's gonna be behind me.
Yes,
he already told her. He told her last night when they weren't sleeping, you know what I'm saying?
They weren't sleeping
and they weren't, you know, talking much, and that's when he told her, I'm going to fight with you. And when he confirms to Pride, I'm going to this fight, Siva's just like, yeah, what you got to say about that? You know what I mean? Like, but she shouldn't be surprised by this information, because they should have already had this conversation.
Oh my God, this is totally new news to me. I have never heard this before.
Baby, really?
Oh my God.
It felt like her being clueless.
You love me. My man love me. My man love me.
Like, and I know she's, like, supposed to be a little bit, like, scatterbrained, if you will, okay? But I don't think she's stupid.
No, she's not either of those things. He
wants to die with
Siva
me.
Is not scatterbrained. She's not stupid. She just shuts out the things that upset her. It's a survival mechanism. Mm-hmm.
She just thinks about the things that make her happy.
Makes me wonder, though, like, for Lex, it feels like it would be totally normal to just, yeah, you know, my girl's gonna fight. Of course I'll be there. So it wouldn't be something he would feel the need to confirm to her.
I was confused by the whole Lex not going thing. I just kind of assumed that, like, I'd gotten something that they'd agreed in a previous episode, like he was going to go do something else instead and not be part of the main fight.
That is hilarious. I'm sorry. The idea that Lex is just like, I got other things to do. I got to pedal
these to go do this.
And then he's like, nah, I guess I'll go with you guys. The market's not great. A lot of free fantasies out there, apparently.
I just lost a lot of product. I think I need to take some downtime.
I guess I'll just go with you guys. I agree with you, Matt. I thought it was kind of given that just because he's offering a voice of dissent does not mean he wasn't going.
Yeah, doesn't mean
going.
He wouldn't go. Yeah. Like, that's his family, right? And his old lady.
But keep in mind, the person who assumes he's not going is Pride. And we already know Pride's personality.
Because Pride, dude, he's so irrational. Oh my god, this man.
So Pride's like, you don't agree, so I guess you're not going with us?
Dude, why are we going from 0 to 100 over a facial expression?
Oh, Maggie, that has been my I've got a phobia of Pride.
I don't believe
this
you.
Has given me a phobia.
Like, are you afraid to even look at the screen when he's on it? Because you're like, he's going to yell at me. He's going to yell at me because I didn't smile at the right time.
I think Pride might be her season 4 trauma, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, he is.
Look how interesting that little tidbit could have been for Lex. Like, Lex scared to go into a fight because he's scared to lose somebody else. Like, that could have been a real character moment for Lex.
Yep.
But again, this whole season, they've not given him anything.
Yeah, exactly. They've given him nothing.
He doesn't want to fight him because he wants to be able to sell, you know, his Paradise DVDs. He doesn't want to do the... I mean, like...
They've handled this better in season 1, where there were moments where Lex legit made it clear, I'm not helping you with this, right? Yeah. And then at the last minute would change his mind.
Yeah.
You know, but they did not establish it. Lex had no intentions of helping.
No, Pride just immediately was like...
Pride just assumed because he's like...
So
well,
you're
going to
be
didn't
a pansy,
agree.
Right?
See, because in Pride's world, if he didn't agree with Celine, he totally wouldn't go fight. You know what I mean?
That's see? Oh my gosh!
And Lex
so
is like...
more about him.
Right. Lex is like, I'm going to go. I don't agree, but I'm... Lex has always been there for the fight, even when he doesn't
always,
agree.
Always, yeah.
Always.
Always. So you don't care.
He's like, I think you guys are all idiots, but I can't let you die alone. I'm going.
Exactly, exactly.
Since the first tribal gathering, that has been Lex's point of view. Mm-hmm. I think you guys are idiots, but I can't let you go by yourself because you'll die without me.
Yep, you'll die without me. Because you're too weak to fight for yourselves. And that's Lex.
He even nearly died at the beach in season 2.
Every time. Lex is always there for the smoke, even if he doesn't agree with the plan, even if he thinks it's stupid.
He's the cause of it sometimes, too, and that's fine.
Every time. But Pride's assumption that, I guess you're not coming with us? And it's like,
you
ditch your girlfriend over a disagreement.
Yeah, just because you would do it.
Doesn't mean Lex would.
Just because you can't tell May you don't like her doesn't mean.
Pride's the worst. Even at the end, Pride's the worst.
You downed me once, man. One time. You downed me one time. And you think you're all that.
Oh, my God. And remember, Lex said, I let him win.
Yes. And I'm like, you probably really did.
You probably did, Lex.
Because Pride has not fought a single time realistically since then. And I mean, him taking Jay down, I think more had to do with Jay not wanting to fight Pride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then Pride actually being able to take Jay down.
Agreed. We've all agreed that if there's anything we really all hate in season 4, it's Pride.
It's Pride.
We all hate Pride.
I feel bad for you, but
No, we just hate him so much.
I did a lot of screaming at him today.
To finish this off, we have to talk about the last moment between Patch and Dee. What did you make of the exchange of gifts?
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Why does he ever get a kiss?
This is my lucky whistle.
Why don't we ever get a kiss?
That's what I realized. That's exactly what I realized today too. I'm like, it never happens, does it? It never happens.
I'm beginning to think it was something in their contracts. I have a feeling that either their parents or the young actors chose not to kiss on screen, because the show has never shied away from young people getting it on, even inappropriately.
Mm. We got a whole montage of it with Tyson and Lex.
Exactly. So I have a feeling that was in the contract that these two would never lock lips, and that's okay. It's okay. It's visually strange for the audience for such a show, but I think that's the case because, again, this is like their last moment together and they still haven't kissed. I think this is a very cute moment between them. Very sweet. It's a little too reminiscent of Jack and Ellie.
That's all Josh said, this whole thing, the whole about them.
Just a tiny bit.
Yep.
I hate doing that to Patch because I genuinely like Patch as his own person. But this felt very Jack and Ellie coded, with her giving her a computer part. All I kept thinking was Jack giving Ellie his lucky whistle, to make her feel better. But otherwise, I think it's a sweet moment, well acted between the two of them.
I definitely feel like I remembered it being so much more than it was. You know what I mean? And then to have it end so abruptly today, I was like, oh, dang, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Patch and D the first time around. But watching, once it got to the point where they'd sort of, it was sort of when they'd, like, admitted their feelings for each other. After that, I feel like they just got really annoying.
Well, it could be that the writers... I agree with you, Matt. And it's part of that has to do with sometimes, writers don't understand how to do a slow burn properly. And that's what Patch and Dee are. They are a slow burn. Mm. And the thing is that when you do a slow burn, maybe your interest is just in the will they. And then when you get to the they will, the writer doesn't know what to do with them at that point. And I feel they became a victim of the they will, now what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like all the thrill in their entire relationship was will they? And then it's like, okay, they will. And then they didn't know what to do with them after that. And they kind of fizzle out a tiny bit after he confesses his love and she accepts the love, and it's like, okay, so what happens now? I would have loved to I don't know. Did they know that they weren't coming back for season 5? Because
I don't know.
If they did, I would have liked a moment with the two of them where they discuss what they want to do next when this is over.
Yeah.
It's not clear. I mean, maybe
I feel like they did know, because Kaylee Stevenson was on a limited contract, and obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say, So they could have given that to us, because
They could have given us.
This is it. The last time we see them is when they're coming through that fence. Yeah, after this scene.
And it's like, I'd like a scene where Patch reconciles he's not going to get his brothers back.
Yeah.
You know, remember, that's why he got into this fight. They'd
forgotten about his brothers.
You know? My brothers. Yeah.
And it's like, give them a moment where he's like, he reconciles. I'm not going to get them back, but I don't want to lose the happiness I found with you.
But I've got family,
You know, I've got something and I don't want to lose this. And they make a decision or something, just anything. If you know they're not coming back, give them a moment. The fans deserve that.
Or even have them go to decide to find, look for his, you know, his brother.
Something like that. Anything to explain before you just, in season 5, we get a letter.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, they deserved a genuine end to that.
I you know, Dee definitely was a pretty main, you know, character, I think, of this season. Mm. We saw her a lot, you know.
She was around since like the first week.
Yeah. I loved Dee, yeah.
So they deserved a real end than the one they got, especially since their last moment is abruptly interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. they don't even get, like, a moment alone before someone else waltzes into the scene.
Every time.
And I'm... right, and it's all awkward as they wander off. And I'm like,
all right, simmer down, guys.
And I'm like, give them a second. Like, give them a chance. Like, just have them be alone and share what they want to happen next. You know, but again, they just did not take the time to explore either Dee and Patch. They both deserved better. Mm-hmm. And they end up being second-rate characters who are compared to better versions of them.
Which I don't agree with that. I personally don't agree with that.
Agree with you. It's like, it's, and the reason they're compared to those other characters is because they didn't explore them. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you'd taken the time, we wouldn't be calling them Jack and Alice, you know?
Yeah. I mean, feels like the least explored, even though she was on screen the most.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they were cute. I'll give them that. Mm-hmm. I thought they were absolutely adorable together in that moment.
I liked Patch, and I really liked, you know, the interaction that Patch had with Sammy after Lex laughed at him, right? Like, so it's definitely sad to see that it's just, like, that's it, but that's how this show is for these last, you know, couple of seasons. Don't get too attached, right?
We're not allowed to get attached.
No.
Yep, they deserved better. I think they could have really explored. I mean, it's almost like it felt like the writers were like, well, if we can't make these two characters kiss, what the frick are we supposed to do with them? You know what I mean? That's the feeling I get. Mm-hmm. Like, if my prediction is right, and for whatever reason it's in the contract, these two do not kiss, either their parents or them made that decision. It's like the writers didn't know what to do with them. They didn't know how to create emotional intimacy and memorable scenes of just, oh, they're so in love, if they couldn't bump uglies with each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, they have something here. And it's this brief moment is so sweet. You know, he's like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I want you to have this. And the way she's looking at him, she's like, you gonna get some, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
She is going to climb all over his motherboard if they survive this battle. It's a gorgeous moment.
Motherboard.
I'm like, why would you interrupt that? You could have just left that scene, this beautiful moment between these two. I love the way they look at each other. I love the way Patch looks at Dee.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Ah, the way he looks at Dee is so sweet.
It is.
He's like, brothers? What brothers?
Who?
Who needs brothers?
And they're one of the only non-toxic relationships in this season.
They are. They make the list of one of the healthiest. You know, their communication's a little awkward.
Yeah, but I was going to say, Dee's a little bit, you know, she's a little bit abrasive sometimes. But
it's awkward, but it's not toxic towards each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm putting them on the list with Lex and Tysan. They were never toxic to each other.
I'm going to put him on the list with Alice and Ryan.
Yep.
Never toxic to each other, you know?
Which is rare in the tribe.
It is rare.
Lot of them are just toxic.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't mind if they're toxic to other people as long as they're not to each other, you know?
Yeah.
And Dee and Patch deserved a better send-off than the one we get.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought they looked so sweet together when he's giving her that little component. But I was like, oh, that's so Jack-coded. And I feel bad that I immediately thought of Jack.
He was already living in his room and his, you know, like.
And I was like.
And Sabine picked up on that as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
I was like, if we explored them more, I wouldn't have thought of Jack, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to suggest something. I'm going to say, imagine if the the relationship that they had for Ram and Java was coded like this, so they weren't toxic to each other, only to other people.
I don't mind that Java and Ram are toxic to each other. I just think they needed to balance it out better, where he doesn't hate her all the time. Like, consistently from the beginning of the season, you see moments where they genuinely bond. And there's a reason he keeps her around as a wife.
Mm. Yeah.
But the problem is they're not consistent as to what Java's there for. because he's such a dick to her for so much of the season. Like 99% of the season, he's a dick to his first wife. And it's only when she's the last one standing that he shows any kindness to her. And even last season, two episodes ago, he was still testing her. So yeah. Like him being nice to her in this season doesn't pan out, doesn't work. You know, I just want more consistency showing that despite their toxicity, like Lex and Zandra, there was an equal amount of toxicity and abuse and real connection that makes you kind of like, I get why these two are together. I get what they, you know, what they bring to the table for each other. That's all I'd ask for Ram and Java. They can be toxic as AF to each other because some people are like that, but you need to show what actually brings them together on a regular basis.
All right, so the Morettes get into position outside the hotel, and after a minor hitch leading to Celine being captured by an unusually efficient techno patrol, they launch their attack. The technos are waiting and instantly mow down the attacking Morettes, and a victorious Ram prepares to enter paradise as his reward. So yeah, just before we get to the second half, what was your immediate thoughts after witnessing the Morettes die?
This was Twilight Breaking Dawn 2 before Twilight Breaking Dawn.
Yes, I was going to say, that definitely that scene from Breaking Dawn.
Is it really bad that I felt good about it? Sorry.
You felt good about it? That's all I got. Yes, that is all I got from that.
It's like, finally.
Kill them all!
Oh my gosh. I guess, I mean, listen, if this is what season 4 has drove you to.
Tamsin's on to something. No, Tamsin's onto something. Given what this... No. Hear me out. Maggie, this isn't my usual kill everybody speech, okay? Bear with me.
Okay.
Tamsin's... Okay. I'm just saying that Tamsin is onto something. If you are looking at what a season means and the characters' actions and where it leads them to, okay? It's like the season 2 ending. The Mallrats lose. Why do they lose? Because of every choice they made throughout the season. It was inevitable that they were going to lose to the Chosen because of their own choices. So I think Tamsin's on to something when she says that watching them all get mowed down due to their own stupidity is fitting. It's fitting for the season that's what happens to them. Okay, because they've been idiotic this entire season. They should not win this battle. It's not satisfactory that they win. It's a rug pull that they win.
It is.
And it's like, oh, a fun surprise that they win. But it's not an earned win by any means. Them losing is the conclusion to every choice they've made this season. They should lose. Yeah. Ram should win, given everything they've done.
The Ram should win.
The only person whose win this is, whose win this whole thing belonged to, is Mega.
Yeah. Them turning out that they won was a rug pull, and it's kind of fun because of the way it's directed. I'll give it that. I think the direction's fantastic and a little fun, but it's not reasonable that these guys won at all. It's not to their merit. It's not to their skill. It's not to anything they've learned or earned throughout the season. They should have lost horribly.
Horribly.
It's due to who they hook up with and who they hang out with.
And because that person has a bigger plan and needs them alive. Mm-hmm. And that's the only... Honestly, it's only fun because Mega has a bigger plan.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why I'm like...
Because we know that.
Mega's like, I really needed Ram gone, and I kind of am going to need the Mallrats.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason why they win.
He was in the way.
And it's like, You were a tool. You're my future scapegoats if I need you. And I'm not going to kill people unnecessarily.
I'm going to keep you around.
That's the only reason them winning actually kind of works in the narrative, because it was all part of Mega's plan. But that's retroactively. Like, that's because we know what happens in season 5. But in season 4 alone, no, they shouldn't have won. It's not satisfactory that they win. Mm. They should have died horribly.
Yeah.
All right.
Not because I want them to, Maggie.
I don't know, dude. This sounds very much like this is something you wish would have happened. Like, I feel like if you had a time machine and you could go back in time and you could rewrite This is what
I'm not saying that. This isn't.
She would have killed Pryce seasons ago.
See, she'll never get me. She'll never get forgive me for saying Bray should have died on Eagle Mountain. She'll never.
That. Consequences. Well,
to be fair,
I'm just saying that. Maggie knows I'm notorious for killing characters. So
almost as bad.
I have
me.
Earned this.
Not just Maggie.
I have earned this distrust.
I mean, it's all for the betterment of the plot. I get it. And you're right. And probably, okay. But the show, so the Mallrats are supposed to be this, you know, the protagonist. So, like, how do we get a season 5 if they kill all of them off?
What's the lead?
They don't. To, like,
oh, okay. So we would have, okay. So what you're saying is the worst of the worst. The literal two worst small rats would have still been alive.
Pride died. Pride and Jay both died. Isn't that amazing?
It is. We got a twofer.
Spoiler alert.
Trudy wasn't there, so I'm fine.
Exactly.
Trudy wasn't there with them, so I'm fine
with
that.
Oh, Trudy too? Okay, right. Okay. So Trudy almost balances out the other two.
That's so mean.
Yeah, we only, honestly, the only people we lost in that moment
for the main were people.
Pride, Jay, Amber, and Amber.
Ebony, Siva.
Amber, Ebony,
and
Siva.
And Lex.
Siva. That's a win.
And Lex.
But to be fair, Lex. Given the attrition rate of the cast, being left only with May, Celine, Mace, Sammy, and I can't remember who else would have been left, feels right. That feels like, yeah, we could have ended up with just these characters.
Oh, that makes me wanna.
Like stakes wise, watching it was believable to kill them all.
Right, Matt. That's what I'm saying. Like story wise, man, you want to shake up and make people come back for season 5?
Yeah,
kill off all your those guys. Genuinely, are dead.
Yeah, kill them all. Kill everybody you love, and that'll definitely make you want to come back.
Yeah, because I've got to be honest. When they killed Amber off and Sandra
we still
off
came back for season 2.
Season 1,
we were like what?
Yeah,
but I liked Bray, so I didn't care about Sandra or Amber.
Well, I'm also going to say I liked Tyson, so I didn't care either.
Meg, you know my opinion on this. I was totally fine with Amber being on.
No, yeah, I'm just.
But a lot of people will feel that way about the other characters that were killed.
Even Bray. Bray would deal with it too after 12 hours. But like,
I just think that it wouldn't have been a bad cliffhanger to leave us to believe that they were dead.
Right, with a little
Not complaining about us finding out
they're like season 2.
I'm not complaining about the fact that we know that they're alive before the season ends. I'm saying it wouldn't have hurt people showing up for season 5 to find out if these characters genuinely died in the season.
Like season 2 with Lex and Bray when they have their big go-kart crash and we didn't know
we didn't know and we definitely came back to find out.
They hit really hard. They took over super hard.
Stop. I keep hearing the Flintstones. Stop. But I'm just saying, like, you know, I only forgive the fact that they all lived because, again, it's not earned.
Oh, my God.
They didn't earn it, Maggie. Okay? Their plan was atrocious. It was ridiculous.
No one has earned a single thing this episode,
they didn't earn that survival, all right? But I forgive it because, again, it's a part of a greater plan by Mega. And that at least pans out in season 5.
Oh, because of Mega.
I'm like, okay, that works. That they're so stupid, they don't even realize that they really should have all died horribly. I can't stop.
Not only did they survive,
I can't stop emphasizing that they should have died horribly. But
given
what their plan was, what they were going to do, they should have died horribly. You know, they were breaking into a hotel full of technos. Fortunately, only ran into 5 of them. Okay, that's it. They ran into 5 technos. That's who they had to go up against. They should not have won, but I'm okay with the fact that they did because Mega was playing his cards on his side.
Because your boy.
My boy. my boy's got a bigger plan. I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's cool. They think they won.
I see you. CD, all right.
You got me, girl.
I'm not sold on Mega's plan to keep them around, but yeah, I do agree generally with what you guys are saying.
What, you think that you also think that they should die?
No, you're Easter Lance.
I'm just saying, like, generally from his point of view, like.
Oh, okay.
He could have let some of them die by accident.
Right.
Maybe we should have a vote. Who thinks that they should have died?
No. There are protagonists. We love them.
No.
Some of them. But,
I love Alanza. We love them, don't we, guys?
Can we pick and choose?
No, I agree with Maggie. If we had a season 2 type of ending, that would have been fantastic to get us to come back for season 5. We didn't need to know they were alive straight away.
No, and it just happened so quickly. Like I said, I dozed off for like less than a minute, and suddenly I'm like, what the heck just happened? Like, I remember.
Yeah.
I know. Out of all that, that was when my brain decided, listen.
It happened so quickly.
It happened
so fast. And then suddenly they're like, so, this is what we did at this point. And then I'm like,
yeah.
None of that happened.
Yeah, let's steamroll right into the aftermath of that, because we get that fantastic explanation of what we just witnessed. And it ends in us discovering that Ram is dumped on a rubbish tip.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, go ahead, panel.
My favorite thing ever.
Okay, I will start with the positives, all right?
Okay.
There are some really cool, there's some cool filming techniques done here. And I'm not
There was positives.
There were, Lance.
I do think it's funny that when you say there's positives, it's always about the filming techniques or the scenery. It's never the
Because
story.
I think that's important in the storytelling. I have to find them somewhere. All right. Everything is about the storytelling, Maggie. All right? I don't mind the confusing mishmash of misleading the audience as to what they think happened. I actually don't mind that too much. I think they wishy-washy it a bit when they explain everything that happens, you know, and especially since we went into this battle not even knowing what the real plan was going to be. And apparently the plan was just to storm the hotel, right? Like, oh.
Yeah, like, I was, that's why I was like, wait a second. Hold up.
That's the plan? Are you kidding me? No stealth? Okay. But I think... filming-wise, showing us one thing and letting us think, oh my gosh, our heroes just all just got shot down. Especially Siva and Lex's position really gave me the giggles. I just go back and look at the position that Siva and Lex die in. It's fabulous, you guys. Anyway, yeah. I love it. But there's something really fun about that, especially for the middle of the episode you're watching and you're like, what? You know, and then to have it, let Ram have his long drawn out goodbye, and Java is just, oh, she is bringing the house down with her performance. All of it's wonderful, only to reveal, no, that's not what actually happened. You know, we don't see them actually disarm the Technos or fight the Technos. They're just imprisoned. Some of it is kind of fun, especially when you add on the dreamlike quality of the entire episode. I'm not saying any of this saves the season or works. I'm just saying, cinematically, it's fun. It's fun to watch.
I can't give you that. No.
Wow. Even Lance said, nope, can't give you that. Matt, I could use some backup here. I'm trying to help you.
You tried so hard.
There's just this one little moment at the end, though, that confuses me. Why on earth, if you're going to dump Ram on a pile of rubbish, why on earth bring his whole heavy...
He doesn't have power.
No, come on, we have to talk about this. Why are you dumping the leader of the Technos on a rubbish tip and thinking that's it?
And giving him his wheelchair.
Because
he's
got a
germophobia.
Stupid. What kind of
like a germaphobe on a wheel on a dime? Sure, but But giving him his wheelchair is just idiotic. Those things weigh it up.
What do you think was going to happen? Like, honestly, you've just supposedly disposed of the leader of the Technos and you just left him on a rubbish tip. Like, what do you think was going to happen?
Right!
They've basically just left him to die, which is it's not very moral.
Yeah, they expected him to be sick and to
die. And that's actually kind but of...
Did they even know he was sick? Cool. That's the problem. They didn't even know he was sick. So they just left him on a rubbish tip.
Well, they've been given the...
Look! You cannot tell me that you did not look at him that whole episode and go...
No, the Morats didn't notice, though. The Morat had no clue Ram
was sick. No, the Morats...
That was Mega and
The Morats have the intel that he's supposed to be dying. They do have that.
Yeah.
It's very plausible that they've gotten that intel that he's supposed to be dying, okay? So I do think there's something darkly awesome about the fact that their answer to dealing with this bad guy is to leave him somewhere he will die. Like, I actually...
Yeah, because he's a germaphobe. But,
like, he, no, the Morats. Like, all of it.
The
Morats.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say,
That was Mega and
they
Jabba.
Didn't do it, they did say. It was Mega and Jabba.
Yeah, that was not the Mallrats. That was their part of the
No.
plan.
Okay, see, that makes it worse.
I don't think.
Well, Jay seemed to hint that he knew.
There was a hint that they knew.
If you're trying to tell me that only Mega and Jabba know what they did with Ram, that makes the Mallrats even...
Well,
that makes it that they were the only ones that knew. I said it was their plan, but they did it.
Right. It makes the Mallrats even dumber if they just said, oh, you guys are going to get rid of him and not ask any questions. Fine.
Okay, cool. That they are dumb, though. I thought you said that already and that they deserve to die.
Right? They are, but that doesn't make the writing better. They shouldn't be dumb. I've complained about them being dumb because the writing made them dumb and they shouldn't be.
You're right.
So this has to be everybody agreed to, that this is the way they would dispose of him, because otherwise...
In a garbage heap, because he's dying.
No.
I can imagine Lex doing that.
He lives in a bubble! He lives in a bubble!
But the fact that we don't even know who knew this, who decided to do this, is bad. That is bad. Yeah. This is a key moment, and we don't even know who was involved in the decisions, who even did it.
Yeah, that's agreed. It's. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying I like the idea that they left him to die. That's dark and, like, actually mature for our heroes to realize at the end of the day that they need to...
Even if he doesn't die, it's his worst nightmare.
It is.
He is in hell now.
And they're just like, what's he going to do?
They wouldn't even torture the Guardian. This doesn't make no sense. They wouldn't even do this to the Guardian.
That's why I don't feel the Mallrats had all... just knew that's why I feel like the Mallrats were ill-informed. They didn't know what was going to happen with Ram. And this was a techno decision.
They just knew he was taken care of.
And see, that's why I think I would have liked it if it was confirmed the Mallrats were fully aware of what was going to happen and actually agreed to it. I think it would be a maturity in them as a group and recognizing the world they live in,
realizing we messed up with the Guardian, so now we have, you know, we should probably do something,
right? But I just think, like, let's go there with our heroes and recognizing, like, we may not want to shed his blood ourselves, but we don't have to save him, you know. It be a Batman about this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna kill you, but I'm not gonna save you either. And it's like, if he's already dying, you are condemning him to death by doing this.
To death. Like I said, he lives in his bed is in a bubble, guys.
He's supposed to be dying anyway. And it's like, what, who knew? Who freaking knew that a rogue on a motorcycle was gonna rescue him in a day?
Who knew? Who knew that bro's bro was gonna be like, hey, who are you?
For no friggin' reason. There's no real good reason for why he does it. They didn't know that. But I'm just saying, like, I would have liked if that is something they all knew was going to happen and they agreed to, because it's like, we don't want to kill him. We don't want blood on our hands like that, because we're chicken and we're not those kind of people. But we can't have him around. And if he's already dying, let him die alone with no tools.
I don't get that dilemma. They just didn't want to give it to us.
And I just would have liked that. They don't want to explore it. That's true. They don't explore it. But I still love the idea of the Mallrats maturing to the point where they were like, oh, you're going to leave him out there to die? You know what? That's probably the best thing.
It would have been nice to hear
that. Leave him out there to die. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, my brain keeps going to Jack in season one. On what should we do with Ebony?
Jack, exactly. Jack was on it. Jack was, Jack was Walking Dead time, okay? Jack knew. He was on it. He understood the apocalypse like nobody else did.
We can give her some pills.
Kill her, humanely.
That's what we needed. We needed them to discuss what they were going to do with Ram and accepting the consequences, but...
Yes. And they just don't. They race through this entire... Right. They race through this entire thing. It's very cartoon logic. I like it cinematically. I think it's fun to watch. But yeah, you stop and start thinking about it and you're like, wait, you know?
And who did they get to do this for them?
Like, who took him out there to the garbage tip? Who rolled him in his chair and his glasses while he's still in his fantasy?
They took him out
to the garbage tip in the middle of all this.
Who would you trust? Like, seriously, it raises too many questions.
Techno.
Like, was it Mega? Mega just... Because remember, the season five starts, none of the other technos know where he is.
They carefully lowered him into the garbage heap from a plane.
It was Jay. Jay's on a plane.
Siva died doing what she loved.
I mean, can you imagine, though? I mean... Like, this is Ram we're talking about. The only person who probably knows where Fed is. Do you really think Jay would have let them get away with this?
Is it? See, more questions.
Oh, give me a break. I'm sorry. You're not going to convince me that Jay gives a crap about his brother. He doesn't.
But here's the thing. Jay, and not even just that. Like, there's no way that he doesn't think Mega can't act or locate his brother. Come on.
Yeah. Like, come on.
Mega knows everything. I don't buy that. He trusts him.
He trusts him implicitly.
Like, they are best buddies. They used to share a bed when they were kids.
Wait, don't forget. There are other Morats that were captured by Ram. We're just going to throw him away on the garbage tip and forget.
They don't care about any of the other Morats taken.
This is the problem. When you think about it more, it just makes less and less sense.
We have moved past that. They have moved back.
Because in the same episode, Amber is like, I haven't forgotten about Bray. So you can't just go, oh, we've forgotten about them all. And then go like, oh, but we're going to throw Ram on a garbage heap and forget about what his hole that he can do. But then, no.
Guys. You guys, remember, season 5 is going to make it so that Ram and every other techno involved will have no access to this information of what happened to anybody who's taking it. It was all Mega the whole time. Even Ram will be like, I have no clue what I did with the people I kidnapped and sold into slavery. It was all Ram. It was all Mega. It was all Mega's fault. Okay, so Ram was never important.
It's very Luke and the Guardian.
Ram wasn't even in charge, guys.
He wasn't even in charge, guys. It was all Mega.
Oh.
We never needed Ram. He was just playing games. Mega was running the technos, apparently, the whole friggin' time.
Not once did we need him. And when he got dangerous and paranoid, it became a problem. So he needed to be taken out. He knew too much, but not enough.
Now, Lance, your concerns could have been addressed if they had a conversation about that. If they actually talked about that Mega will be able to take over the systems once Ram is gone and help them find who they need to find. You know, he's trying to win the Mallrats over to join Mega. Could have done that, but no, it's never spoken of. These guys do not care about what happens after they take down Ram. They don't care about the power vacuum that's going to happen.
It's a rinse and repeat for them, isn't it? It is. It's a rinse and repeat. Every finale ends the same way, apart from season 2.
But yeah, I just, it's silly and it's, but I'll say it's entertaining. I'll give it that. It's entertaining and
it makes for good TV.
It does. And I hate saying this because I don't want Tamsin to get a point, but I kind of like it a tiny bit more than season 3's finale. Because I feel like season 3 was more grounded in reality. And so when there's questions of what the frick just happened, it makes less sense and I'm more angry It's like, what do you mean? What happened to the guardian's body and all that stuff? And nobody's going to ask, did Alice actually kill him? Where is he if she did? And on and on. This is so silly that it's just fun that it don't make any sense. You know, like, it's so dumb. It's like,
finally, I get my flowers.
You get one flower, Hanson. One flower, okay? Don't get too big in your head. One flower.
It's not a bouquet. It's not even a vase, okay?
It's too dumb for me.
But this is so dumb. It's like, come on, the whole season has been ridiculous. Can you take any of this seriously by this point? Are you really shocked?
No. Listen, the first time I saw the Zap-Zap on their wrist, I knew. I knew. I'm like, okay, so we went from what we were last season to
what
this.
About Matt?
Yeah, Matt. This is your season, Matt. You love this. What do you think of this?
Well, he experienced this first, though, so is his opinion biased?
All I'm just saying. Opinions are biased.
I think I clearly don't mind ridiculous.
That's all that matters. Like, he had fun. He had a good time.
Yeah, that's all I want.
This is cinematic, and Zoot's back. I mean, who cares if anything makes sense? This is fun.
It's Zoot be praised.
It's ridiculous. We get a switcheroo. That's not what really happened. And this is what happened. And ooh, and we get people giving us exposition as to what happened rather than showing us what really happened.
And it looks cool. Hey,
this is how this went down, and then you did this, right. And then you did this.
No, like, it's crazy at the end.
Followed by...
It's a really bad Sherlock Holmes episode. You know what I mean?
It was a murder mystery.
Right.
That's
yeah.
what it felt like.
And you just pull the mask off and be like, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you tribal kids, you know? And
that's where we went wrong. There was no
doubt. The whole time it was just, yeah.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah.
I guess there's no talk.
I'm sorry. There is just nothing more satisfying than Ram crying like a baby. Okay. Like, it is so good. It is. Amazing.
This is a reality space. That's real.
Put so much in that performance.
He is spitting. He is giving 100%.
Yes. I got a question though. Did they take the battery out of his wheelchair?
No, because you can still hear it trying to move. They didn't even They didn't even take the battery out of the chair.
They're like, this guy ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. How did they get it out there? How did Mega get it out there?
It was the airplane. They stuck him on a dolly, okay, and they carried him out.
Maybe got like a chute out of the back of the hotel.
I just keep picturing Mega rolling him out to a garbage can.
Yeah, exactly.
In some indiscernible location.
He hits a bump and goes, oops, my bad.
Full time, Ram has the glasses on and thinks he's getting his great send-off. But no, Mega's just walking him out into the wilderness to a garbage tip we've never heard of. Which apparently isn't really in the middle of nowhere, come season 5.
No, it's
five.
Not even super close to
it's
the freaking
super
hotel.
Super close to everything.
That honor walk was very short.
Like, dude, just, like, there's so many places you could have dropped that thing and he would have died of dehydration in three days, you know?
It would have been so freaking easy to just grab him out of that chair and dump him in there.
Just lock him in a room somewhere.
Exactly! You didn't even have to do all this!
Just lock
him in
up.
A room! And he'll die there as long as he's not in his bubble or with his medicines or his tubes.
Yeah.
He'll still supposedly die.
But that's like, if you really want him to be on a rubbish dump to die, why on earth move the wheelchair?
I mean, I like it. I love it, and it serves him right.
See, the problem with being the rubbish tip, Slade and his magic penis can show up and save him. I'm sorry, Slade meets the magic penis trope more than anybody I've ever read in fiction, okay?
Hey, he is the ultimate Bray replacement, okay?
It's like Bray on a motorcycle.
The perfect blend of Bray and Lex, all right?
Yes.
Just a little bit shady, a little bit questionable, but he's got good
morals.
And he's
got the hair.
But he's not afraid to be a little gray and get his hands dirty. He is the perfect blend of the both of them. And they weren't intending on him showing up and saving Ram. Can you blame them? Can you blame them for not seeing that?
Yes, I can, because shouldn't Mega know? Shouldn't Mega have eyes on where he's at That's all I'm going to say. You would think that since he knows so much and he's so, you know, he's this overseer, that he would know. That he would know that he was just, hey, right outside this little dump that we'd... No.
No, I agree. Retrospectively, what they do with Ram is really stupid. Because, again, they make it seem like here, it's the middle of nowhere. Ram isn't going to get
any
help.
And nobody knows who he is.
And he's going to die
yada,
there.
Yada, yada.
But in season 5, they open it. There's a whole community living yes. around this garbage tip. Anybody could show up to help this guy. And will help this guy. And it's dumb. Mm-hmm. It really is stupid. I don't even know why he's in the chair, you know? But in this just...
You didn't think anybody would go and help him? Anybody? You didn't think anybody?
Honestly, I think they just really wanted him out of that hotel to make sure no techno would...
Dude, there are empty buildings in the city. They could have just ditched him in an empty city. Anywhere. Put him in a truck, drive 50 miles out, leave him on the side of the road, come back. Like, there's so many things they could have done to get rid of him. But
they could have locked him in the cage, too.
They didn't want to, though, guys. At the end of the day, they didn't want to get rid of him. That's the truth. And it's like, unlike with Ebony, where they have found better reasons for keeping her around, even though the heroes shouldn't want her around because she's done them dirty, blah, blah, blah.
She's the worst.
They didn't even try to come up with a good reason to keep Ram around. They just made the heroes idiots for the way they disposed of him.
I think that could have been done in so many ways, though. Like, he could have been in a transport. Yeah.
Yes, for the season, absolutely. That's why I said this is at least entertaining and bonkers and off the wall and very fitting with this season.
It's honestly, it was definitely that, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Right, that's all the season has been. Like, no linear sense, but this is happening, I guess.
Oh, that also didn't make sense, but okay.
And it was fun to watch. I had fun. I ain't gonna lie, you guys. I had fun watching this finale. It's so
stupid. Like I said, I fell asleep.
This is so stupid. But... I'm having the time of my life. This is the most entertained I've been this entire season.
I mean, that's good. A finale should entertain you.
Like, this is... Maybe I was entertained in watching everybody die. I don't know what it was that did it for me.
I got a good picture of it. Don't worry.
But it was... But yeah, it doesn't save the season. And it doesn't bring anything together. It doesn't bring you to a thematic close that you feel you are building to, leaning to, or working towards you. Again, this is without future information. This is just this season alone.
I don't know.
It's not satisfactory that these guys won, that this thing is just a mishmash of this is what happened, but no, this is what actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's too comical. It's silly, but you could have fun with it if you just shut everything off, you know? And I do think there's some merit to being able to shut everything off and enjoy the spectacle of what this was.
I am testament.
The spectacle.
Yeah. And I think there's some merit to that. It was visually stimulating.
And just to wrap up the finale, Jay and Ebony discuss their future following the battle. With Jay unwilling to run away with her, but still wanting to be together. Before Ebony can reply, however, she's distracted by further whispers from Zoot and wanders off. As we see a mysterious figure tapping away on a keyboard, Ebony moves through the hotel and comes face to face with Zoot, who explains that his prophecy is coming true, the Technos brought power, and now chaos will follow. Yeah, what do you make of the final moments of season 4?
Jay, you're the worst. You're the worst. You are the worst. What is she?
Hate him.
Okay, so remember, he made the decision to come back to the city without even discussing it with his girlfriend. Yeah. After their plans were to leave everything, he just says, I'm going back to the city.
I'm talking to the pretty blonde lady.
I'm saving my brother. I'm captured. And he's like, and then we can run away together after we take down Ram. And so Ram has been taken down, and she comes to him as they're per agreement and says, okay, so what happens next? And he has the audacity to talk about his plans. Those are the words mm-hmm. he uses, you guys. His plans for the city. And she's like, but what about what we decided together? And he's just like, I mean, like, we can still...
I guess you can tag along.
Like, yeah, exactly. You could tag along. If you want to be with me, you got to do what I want to mm-hmm. do. Once more, he set another hurdle for her to jump over in their relationship. And it'll never end. It'll never end with the hurdles because now he's changing things up again.
Well, Ash is back there.
I know I agreed to come, like, run away after we took down Ram, but I don't want to do that. But if you want to be together, we could do that as long as you do what I want to do. You know, so again, he puts the onus on him. And this is very important. Ebony looks at him and says, but is that what you want? She's asking, do you actually want to be with me? Do you want a relationship with me? Do you want us to be together? Look at his face when she says that.
No, I don't like looking at his face.
He is, I know. I understand, but you're going to have to do an analysis. He doesn't want to be the guy who breaks up with her. He wants to push her till she breaks up with him so he gets to be the victim. All right? So he doesn't even like answer her. When she says, is that what you want? You want us to be together to do your dream? He should have said, absolutely. I want you by my side while we do my dream of rebuilding the city. But instead, he stares at her and bleh, 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 bleh. That's what comes out of his mouth. I'm sure of it. I'll quote him. And it pisses me off so much. And when his girlfriend stares off into space and wanders off, does he follow her to make sure she's okay? Nope. She's able to run into her Zoot ghost uninterrupted because her boyfriend's like, well,
uninterrupted.
I don't know what that was about. Whatever. And wandered off to do whatever he's doing.
Bye.
Okay. I guess that conversation's over. You know what I mean? Like, it pissed me off so much. I want to punch him in. I want to punch him in his. I hate him so much. I like the way it's filmed that Ebony, you know, again, every time she starts, it feels like she's fallen asleep and she's not aware she's fallen asleep. I do like that dreamlike quality that they were playing with in this episode. I think that's cool. And again, Meryl is acting her butt off and it's really not well done. And I do like that Zoot has at least been established as a trauma trigger for her that would set her off.
So we know that.
So yeah. I'm like, I'm glad that didn't come out of nowhere. That it, like, Zoot comes back. I don't need Zoot to come back. I'm not this great lover of Zoot where I needed him to come back for the season. But since it has been established that for Ebony, he was a traumatic event of her life and put her through so much, and we got to see it from that lens, I don't mind that, oh, this is what she's seeing. It didn't come out of nowhere.
It's very much a nightmare version of Zoot, isn't it? Like, the sort of... The dead expression on the eyes and the way he's speaking. It's not like a Zoot that's grounded in reality.
No, he's more like the Zoot we've seen in Ebony's dreams before. Or, well, nightmares.
Yeah.
And again, I don't mind the introduction to what... You guys admit, at this time, you didn't know she had been hit with paradise. It felt supernatural. You're like, why is Ebony seeing this? You know?
Yeah.
And again, because they don't lay the groundwork for her being hit with the Paradise program. And so they want you to think it's supernatural. And it works in that context. And you're curious as to why she has been triggered this way and is seeing this stuff.
And with all the curveballs that the show's thrown, it very well could have been.
Right. Why not?
Okay, so now we're dealing with ghosts. Right. That's cool.
Who cares? Let's do it, you know?
Yeah. False prophecies in season 2 and 3. Now ghosts.
The gloves are off. Let's just go balls to the wall.
Like, I wouldn't have been overly surprised if it actually was. If it wasn't, you know, the tapping on the keyboard.
Exactly. That was me too. That's what I was thinking.
I might have been more satisfied with it, if I'm honest.
Like, okay.
Yeah, and that's obviously Ram's hand as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ebony's either having a psychotic break or...
Psychotic break, I guess.
You know, there's at least a lot of fun stuff for fan fiction here.
Yeah.
But they don't... Yeah. The unfortunate thing is, again, none of this is set up. Whether it's a psychotic break or whether it is the paradise, neither of them have been set up for it to affect Ebony.
Yeah.
They don't set it up. It was an idea someone got in the writer's room for the last couple of episodes, and they threw it in there. And they didn't, like, plan for it. They didn't set it up.
It was someone thinking back to mid-season 3, and the garden with his suit lives, and was like, okay, fun, we can use that.
But yeah, I mean, all of this is just to make us come back. And I do think in some ways it's a little more effective. I don't know. Is it more effective than the plane arriving? I don't know.
I don't know. I think the plane is like probably going to be like it as far as like, oh my God, I have to see what happens.
I think the plane like leads for most disappointing promises.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It absolutely lets you down because you're like, really?
This is what it
is? Are you kidding
me? Yeah, because like, think about it. You end season three, a plane is showing up. It captures everyone's attention. Even people in the countryside are like, what is up? Someone's flying
crap,
a plane.
What's that?
It's promising so much. And then what it gives you is very disappointing. So it's like, at least this isn't that disappointing when we find out what's happening to Ebony, as I feel the Technos were a big disappointment to me.
Yeah.
Given what season three was, that finale was promising me with this airplane.
Yes.
I'm not as disappointed by season five. I'm like, oh, so, okay.
Is that though? Because they had a plane, but the end of season three is so terrible that having the plane kind of makes up for that long, monotonous slog that we went through to get to the plane. So maybe it feels cathartic because you're like, my God, finally something's happening. There's a plot, it's emerging. Whereas,
And then season four starts.
You know,
Matt,
maybe it's that.
Matt, what did you think about suddenly Zoot showing up?
I was like, who's Zoot?
I bet you were really confused.
You didn't know who Zoot was?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You started with season four? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he started in season four. He didn't see nothing before that, so Zoot was a mystery.
Oh, he might have said that
and Ebony before. Was clearly just crazy.
That's why. You probably said that before and I just forgot, but wow. That's wild. You're like, who's this guy?
and that was probably the same for a lot of people who started with season four. They were all so who's haunting Ebony? Which techno is this? And is he Mega's boss or...
Who's a Zoot and why do we care? And why is this such a big deal?
That actually adds a whole layer of bad to the writing, to be honest.
Yeah.
I honestly think about it. If you're going to build up to this, it's season four. You are appealing to a lot of new viewers and you're erasing a lot from the past three seasons. Mm-hmm. If you know that the end of this season is going to lead to the return of Zoot, you need to seed that throughout the season.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no Zoot seeding for this Zoot plant that springs up in the finale.
None, considering last season.
So poor Matt is like, who the frick is this guy? Has no idea how important he is.
None.
That's crazy. That's bad writing. That's terrible.
And it's just some random fella from season one.
Yep.
He could have been anyone.
Yeah. Anybody.
For you. He could
and only people who gave a crap were people who'd already knew, who'd already been following the show, and were like, why is Zoot back? But poor Matt's like, what's with this guy's eyes? Who is he?
Why are his eyes white?
Who's this creepy dude haunting Ebony?
Like, no context. That's crazy. That's terrible.
That's sinister writing. Music. So obviously it was something bad.
Yeah, you knew it was a bad guy, but that's it? That's it? No importance to this bad guy.
Like, if this is Ebony, why is this bad guy, like, why is she so afraid of this bad guy? Who is this person? Yeah, that's crazy.
That's terrible. That gives it a whole new context. I didn't even really think about it, but that is awful. There's no leading up to the Zoot return. Nothing leading up to Ebony seeing Zoot. They didn't know where they were going this season. Had not a clue. Didn't build up to a single thing. As a finale, this is fun. This is entertaining. Does it make an ounce of sense? No. Does it satisfyingly conclude what we've watched for a year? No, it doesn't. The filming was great in this episode.
Listen, the filming was great.
Cinematography, chef's kiss.
I do think, though, probably controversially, sorry, before I say this, I would still say that season four is my
favorite after season one.
I'm going to let you have that. I will murder you.
Look, I like you. We'll only let you have it since it was where you were introduced.
I like you. I think you're a great guy.
Yeah, that's
much. I won't judge you. I will not assume because you like season four that you kill baby seals. I won't do that to you, okay? I won't judge you that way.
Nope.
It's fair. You're allowed to like this season, Matt. We tried to like it for you.
You are allowed to.
We tried
like
to like it
like.
For you so much, Matt. We did. Maggie gave up. She gave
Don't
up.
Don't let her fool you. I gave up.
She
like
said, "Screw you,
then.
Matt." But the rest of us tried very hard.
it was from Matt. It makes sense because we've seen the destruction of what they did to Pride. We've seen how they ruined other characters, but he didn't have that history with those characters. So to him, they were always crappy.
That's true.
Yeah, I think in terms of like story and, you know, like all the themes of like occupation and resistance and even like all the stuff with Pride and addiction and stuff like that, I think story wise, it still sort of holds up. And I feel like it's tighter than the end of. The end of season three was. I guess character wise, it's probably more like archetypes than maybe how the character started out.
There's more happening.
Dang. So we sat here and we crapped on this season while you just loved it. You just let us crap on it.
Yeah, kudos to you, man.
I had kind of hoped to that by the end of it you would be in the same boat, but clearly not.
Matt, at what point were you writing those notes be like, there's no hope. They're never going to see what I see. Because give this guy kudos. You guys, think about this. We do this. And I want the audience to think about this. It takes us maybe, you know, a whole year to get through a season that we're watching. Matt has to make these notes for us. Okay. Him and Lance make these notes. Think about that. Every week, this guy's coming together to watch his favorite episodes and write notes, ask us questions about it, knowing that we, given our track record, are going to take a huge dump on everything that he finds fascinating. And he never gave up. Matt is still with us. So I want to give a huge round of applause to Matt for sticking with it and saying, that's okay. They don't have to like it. I'm still going to make these notes and ask them what they think of what I thought was awesome. And I'm just like, Matt, you're the goat. Well done.
Yeah, that's fine. I could laugh because I know what you've got coming up.
He knows what you guys got suffering through.
I
we're going to really hate this one.
I am. I'm looking forward to the insanity of season five.
I like
because by then it's like nobody cares. Nobody cares. Not even the actors care. Come season five,
we will see how I feel about it.
Maggie, you better come back.
I'm going to.
We gave you season four off. All right.
I know. I know.
You better come back.
I'm gonna.
But you know what? I will say I have enjoyed going through this with you guys. Season four has been tough. All right. Tough, but I'm
so proud of you guys.
Our friendship survived. I still love you guys.
It was
I don't wish your death.
That's it was quite my a first bar. Whole season.
Yeah.
Matt, it means a lot that this didn't ruin our friendship, okay? Like
it does.
Think about it. When we first started in season one, we didn't really know each other that well. And it's hard to separate your opinions on something with someone else's, just, you know, their opinion with it and without taking it personally. And, you know, and it's like we reached season four with very differing opinions and stuff. And yet we came out of it so loving each other. And I enjoyed doing this with you. I'm never revisiting this again, but I loved doing it with you guys. I did.
I'm so glad I didn't have to.
Maggie's like, our friendship wouldn't have survived.
Bro, you guys would have hated me. I'd have been complaining so much. I can be a Karen, and I'm good with that.
Oh my gosh. But I actually kind of had a little fun with this because I said it was so silly and crazy, and I love the camera work and the direction, and they just...
I did a lot of laughing.
Yeah, they just went balls out.
I did a lot. Are you kidding me?
There is just so much in this whole season that apparently my brain had actively repressed.
Blacked out, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, it's understandable.
Like, looking back at the past year, there's so much about this season that I forgot. Like my hatred of Bride.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, I thought I liked him a lot more, you know?
Yeah, me too. Like, I did too.
Originally, I was sad when Pride died. Now I'm just counting the episodes.
I think for me, it's more I'm angry at May.
Oh, yeah, that too.
I'm not necessarily sad, you know what I mean? But I'm angry at May because I just hate her.
Oh, yeah, that too. But
you've never forgiven May.
No.
I won't.
But
me, I'm just like, she did a good deed. She's still at fault. It was still wrong, but she rid the world of someone it needed to go.
Yeah. And it's like, I never expected to find even an ounce of liking for Ved.
Oh, wow. That was a wonderful discovery.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful to discovering the things I did like about season 4. And a lot of it was character work. You know, I discovered how much I liked Ved, Java. I have a whole new opinion of her that I didn't have in the past. And there's plenty of good to be found in the season. It doesn't save the season. It doesn't make up for the whole season, but it's there. It doesn't
make up for the fact the season exists.
Right. And that was awesome. Those were awesome things to discover and realize. Okay, that was awesome. Like, I didn't know how good that actually was. It makes me sadder, you know, the loss of potential, but there was some good stuff here.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's over, though, guys. I'm so glad this is over.
Absolutely.
It's been a rough year.
Hey, at least we're going to start season 5 with sunshine.
Yeah. And craziness.
And, you know, and warmth. And like,
get your happy pills.
You're going to need them.
Exactly.
That's season 5. But we did it, you guys. We did it. Yay!
And yet, I still don't hate the idea of the technos.
I don't either.
No, I don't.
I will hate it all enough for the both of us. Okay. For all of us, okay?
That's one thing this season has shown to us, that we don't hate the concept of the technos. It's how they executed it.
I think Matt said it best. The technos did breathe a breath of fresh air into the concept of the show. It's not, the execution wasn't done well, but their idea is not flawed.
Mm, yes. And one of the best things about the technos is that they were in this show called The Tribe, and they're not really a tribe.
Mm.
Nope. But the fault is that they didn't know who the technos were when they brought them in. And they never figure out who the technos are. They have 2 seasons to figure it out.
They're the nerds.
And they never figure out who the technos are, where they come from. It's not until the books that they actually seem to solidify where the technos came from, who they are, what it is they do. But not in the show.
Yeah.
We were so close to ending on a positive.
Yeah, I know.
I was trying,
but he just flipped. But on that note, that brings series 4, episode 52, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel and your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation, just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time. So until then, bye.
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 Wow.
That's amazing. That was so well timed. The harmony, yes.